Can it be the year of Silent Hill? I'd really like it to be. Akira Yamaoka is back with the series, a new movie, a remake, an interactive media experience, and two new games in the works. If it all goes bust, break out your PS2s, your PS4 that gives you anxiety because it still has PT on it, and any other version of the series you liked because the secondhand market is good. While we party like it's 1999, now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you about one of these things and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again with the 952nd episode of our show for tonight, March the 19th of 2023. I hope those of you that celebrated or did whatever for St. Patrick's Day had a good time. Everyone else, I hope you had a good weekend. And here we are on Sunday night to wrap it all up and put a little bow on our gaming weeks and our gaming weekends and everything that's been going on in the gaming industry. I am Rob Roberts, and I am joined, as always, by the one and only Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Up.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little sore today because I have been got the okay to get back into doing workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I started back on my hip workouts to strengthen my hip back up. I've said it before, I've got premature arthritis in my right hip, and just trying to build the muscle around it and stay in good shape and prep for a potential Disneyland trip for my birthday.
That'd be fun. So if you're working out, does this mean how long until we get a flex redeem on Dark Sakura's OLR? A free one on the house here at Vogue Network, where we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And if you want to see some
of the gun show,
we try to keep it minimal on the visual antics because it is a podcast. It's been a podcast for 21 years, about give or take. So we try to keep the visuals minimum, but who am I to say no to a free flex redeem from Dark Sakura OLR?
I actually am considering putting up my own flex redeem soon. Once I'm back to where I was lifting before, it's slow going. I stopped for about 7 months while I was so sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to downgrade my weights. Instead of starting off with 15s, I'm starting off, well, I mean, technically I have a little bar on there, so I'm actually starting off with 10. And then going to work myself back up to my 15s, and I'm still using my kettlebell at 35.
Nice.
So eventually I'll have to buy a 55-pound kettlebell. So.
All right. Well, I'm not sure how much he's working out, but let's say hello anyway to Techmaster Loki.
I'm not working out at all right now.
Can we get a flex redeem?
For no.
Denied. How are you doing, Loki?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything new and exciting in your world?
No.
Yeah. Mood. I hear you. It's been a week. It's been nothing but rainy and stormy this week. It sort of means no going out and doing anything fun. It's just staying in and playing video games. But that's fun too. Speaking of video games,
I didn't done stuff.
Did you? I hardly went outside and did anything.
I replanted 6 plants over the last couple of days because they were getting strangled in their teensy little pots.
Actually, I will say yesterday it was more overcast, so I was able to go out and do, like, not to get in my gaming weeks too much, but oops, do like Pokemon Community Day in Pokemon Go because they had a Community Day yesterday, and then Pikmin, like all the Niantic games had a Community Day the same day because who coordinates things over there? I don't know.
Coordinate.
Okay, can't be bothered to do one office talking to the other. We can't do that. I did get out Saturday, but that was really it. I got in like 12,000 steps yesterday, so I guess I could do a little bit. Really, Mike Defner in our chat, because as we tape live, y'all can chat along with us over twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Def says, speaking of Pokemon Go Community Day for April is Togetic. Wouldn't that be Togepi? Wouldn't the baby form spawn? Or are they actually going to form Togetic everywhere?
The upgrade?
Yeah, I was going to say Togetic is the mid form. So that would be weird if it's not Togepi's. I would expect would be the... Interesting. Mike Def says, no, it's Togetic. Interesting. Huh. I wonder why they're doing it that way. I wonder... Oh, Def says baby forms are not usually found in the wild. Well, for some of the other three, I mean, if you consider Bulbasaur a baby form, or a lot of the other three evolution, right? Most of the time, we do see the base evolution in the wild. So it is a little weird. I think there's going to be a lot of people that find that weird. But I'm going to best...
Well, if you're looking for baby animals in the wild, you need to make sure that you leave them with their mother.
Yes. Well, I'm going to guess that for that community day, they do 2 kilometer eggs and they do like half hatch distance and all of the eggs are going to have Togepi. I bet that's what they do to kind of bridge that gap, so to speak.
May have to start playing again just so I can have 57,000 Togepi.
Or be like Shane and get like 700 shiny ones for no reason than just you love shinies.
Well, Togepi, before Mimikyu was invented, Togepi was my favorite, and I actually have a very special fond memory for Togepi.
Mm.
Because I don't know, I've told the story about when I got held up at gunpoint working at GNC, right?
Yeah, you've mentioned it before. Scary stuff. Yeah.
Well, Dan took me to Toys R Us to cheer me up, and I found a $20 bill in the parking lot. And I used that $20 bill to buy myself a Togepi plushie that I still have to this day, and it's sort of like my comfort plushie.
Your little karma plushie in some ways.
That's not exactly how karma works.
I know, but okay, you know what I mean.
But it ended up being like my little comfort. Like, I kind of felt like maybe the universe wasn't completely shit.
You know, Toys R Us is like half back now. They're
really?
Well, they're mini stores inside Macy's. So like, as I was walking around downtown yesterday, which by the way was a hoot and a holler here in Sacramento where we're all based, the NCAA championships were going on at the Golden One Center. Or I don't know if it's a championships or a qualifier, whatever, but the Sacramento Arena was like a site for that. So I don't know sports well enough to tell you what game it was, but I just know there were a fuck ton of people. And yes, that's an actual scientific measurement. There was a fuck ton of people down there, but I was walking through that area anyway. And there's like that Macy's right there. Right. And so you walk by the window and they actually have like it's a new style drawing, but they have Jeffrey the giraffe and stuff in the window because, if you go up to the second floor, there's like a Toys R Us in the Macy's. So that's what it's like. You know how there's like Sephora's inside JCPenney and stuff? Like they
yeah,
do. It's like that.
I was gonna ask if it's the same thing.
Yeah. It's like that.
But it's I miss the big warehouse.
I know. I know, but I sadly think those days may be behind us. So, but at least if you like the mascots, if you're a Jeffrey the Giraffe fan, at least there's that. So, free ad for them. All right. also,
you know, I actually have a Toys R Us bag from when they went out of business.
Oh, like that you got like super cheap or something?
Well, no, I mean that like they gave me extra shopping bags, like the plastic bags.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Little mementos. All right.
Yeah, that was nice.
Let's move on to giving free advertisements for Nintendo, because for our lead topic tonight, I want to talk a little bit about the Wii U and the 3DS are having their stores close. Now, technically, the closure date is March 27th, so that's actually a week from Monday. Part of the reason I want to bring it up tonight, though, is that I would tell you is that if you want to wait until the very last second, I think that's not a good decision, because with time zones, with the way networks work, with sometimes companies really eager to pull the plug, I would not expect that this is going to work the entire length of the day, March 27th. So I really think this is the last week that those shops are open if you have any 3DS or Wii U purchases that you want to get. And boy, some people want to make a lot of purchases. There's a YouTuber out there by the name The Completionist, and he's been around the gaming media this week because he actually spent $22,791 getting every single digital title that's available on the Wii U and the 3DS. That's 866 Wii U games and 1,547 3DS games, adding up to 1.2 terabytes of Wii U space and 267 gigabytes on the 3DS. Now, this isn't something he did all last night. This whole effort has taken about a year. I will defer to our pal Bobby Blackwolf, who really went into the weeds tonight on his show about like what the banking restrictions are and what the prepaid cards are. And like, so all these roadblocks that stopped him and his team, it actually wasn't just him, it was his whole team, from actually buying every game in one day. So my point is, if you're trying to do what The Completionist did tomorrow, it's too late. the restrictions that are in place with how much money you can drop before you're triggering, you know, security measures. It's too much. But if there are a few pieces of low hanging fruit, so to speak, or things that, you know, you can't get physically or whatever that you want to get, you know, this is the week to really think about it if you have either of those systems still connected. And I imagine more of you probably still have access to a 3DS pretty readily than you might the Wii U. Some suggestions to throw out there if you are looking for things on the 3DS, I would highly suggest go back and look at the 3D Classics catalog. Nintendo and Sega both did a round of some 3D classics, and they're very well done for what they are. I know Nintendo had a Kid Icarus one in there. They had some other games too. I don't remember if they had a Metroid. Excitebike, I think, was one of the other games that they did for 3DS. There were some others too. I'll look and chat in a minute here because you're probably shouting them out. But Sega did quite a few. They had like Gunstar Heroes was in the catalog, Sonic, several Sonic games. They had a lot in the catalog, and I would recommend those. I think it's actually a missed opportunity that those haven't been re-released, yes, in 2D form on the Switch, especially in the case of the Nintendo ones. You know, they souped up the classics without going in and doing a complete like overhaul and calling them pixel remasters or whatever. They seemed pretty, you know, simple, so to speak, at the end of the day. So those would be some things I would recommend. I'm curious in chat, what would you all recommend for the Wii U and the 3DS for titles to go grab before they go away? I know, again, during Bobby's show, one suggestion that came up that I thought was really good would be the Pokemon Bank. If you want to be able to transfer, you will be able to re-download titles that you've downloaded in the past. Lord knows how much longer you'll be able to do that, though. That won't be forever. But you can download things like Pokemon Bank and have that available to transfer 3DS Pokemon and DS Pokemon into Bank, which then you can transfer into Home. That's how you get your Pokemon into modern games. And with that, I would say the 3DS re-release of things like Pokemon Yellow that actually had the Pokemon transporter built in to the old ROMs, which is pretty cool. So you can like go catch an old Pikachu from a Game Boy game and transfer it all the way to Pokemon Scarlet. You could do that now, but you have to have all the systems set in place to be able to do that. Fixation Gaze in chat says, I recommend the Phoenix Wright series. It's the best on the 3DS. Yes. Now, I should also say there are quite a few 3DS and Wii U games that are getting remastered on Switch. We have seen a lot of those come back. I think with Phoenix Wright, we're more seeing newer titles. I know there's been a new one announced in that series. So, I keep an eye out for those, but yeah, certainly the classics for sure. Dark Tetsuya suggests NES Remix. That is a great concept too. I'm surprised Nintendo has never revisited or re-released that title in any form. There were versions on the 3DS and the Wii U, if I remember right. I want to say the Wii U had a volume 1 and a volume 2, and the 3DS had a retail release that was like a mishmash of both, like highlight, like a best of from both. I would highly recommend those. She-Hulk 10 suggests Xenoblade X Chronicles only on Wii U. That's a really good one. Absolutely. That's a Xenoblade game they haven't brought on the Switch yet. I think they're saving it for the Switch's successor, but maybe that's just wishful thinking. Mike Deft in chat suggests Rhythm Heaven Megamix for all my rhythm game enthusiasts. Bonds 006 suggests Fire Emblem. I believe, didn't the original Fire Emblem come out as a standalone on Switch eShop? I want to say that was a thing they announced during one of the directs, because they did like a really expensive physical release for some reason of that too. But if you know, I know there were certain games in the series that are there too. So, you know, certainly worth looking at as well. Mike Deft suggests Kirby's Adventure 3D. That was the definitive version of playing that game. SSJ100 Map backs up that the 3D classics are great. Gunstar Heroes, Streets of Rage, and Outrun, to name a few. Ooh, that's right. Outrun in the 3DS classics is really good. Really, really good.
The thing is with a lot of those games, though, is like, I already have like a bunch of them elsewhere. Like that would be for me my reason for not going after some of these.
Yeah.
It's cool to have them on the console, but it's also extra money.
Yeah, it is. And I think what made the 3D versions unique would be, well, the 3D. You're not really going to get that a lot of other places. But they did. I don't remember the Sega classics particularly. Chat, you might have to back me up, but I know the Nintendo ones, they actually did enhance the original ROMs a little bit. Now, of course, if you want your experience pure, then this is actually going to be a turnoff for you and not a reason to get it. For me, I thought it was a nice little like fresh coat of paint on the old games. I liked what they did with that. I thought that was really cool. As Joe and Hunter Matt says, we'll likely not see anything 3D like this again. Don't see Nintendo revisiting 3D again. I agree with that. And 3D in general seems to be like, remember 3D televisions? Those kind of came and went, didn't they? They barely do 3D movies anymore. I know they exist, but I feel like now it's 4D. Have you heard about this whole thing? Like people going to see Scream 6, and when people get killed, it splashes water to simulate blood. It's 4D stuff that they're doing now.
Not 4D. The fourth dimension is time.
Well, you know, that's what they call it.
Hey, go back and watch Hypercube. It was a good movie, better than people give it credit for.
I didn't get my chance on the Star Trek cruise. I'm very disappointed because Nicole DeBauer was there, and I wanted to say I loved you in Cube, but I didn't get my chance because she also was the other Jax in season 7. But yeah,
Dax.
Why did I say Jax? Jazita. Yeah, Jazita and Ezri Dax. Yeah,
Jadzia.
I always butcher the names. Anyway, Fixation Gaze says, I will say Universal was doing 4D way long ago in their parks for the Shrek rides. Yeah, that's where the whole 4D phenomenon came from. But yeah. Tiger Claw says Super Mario movie will be in 3D. I know they still do 3D movies, but I feel like that's the theaters kind of shoehorning the technology that they paid all this money to implement, and they're like refusing to walk away from it until they have to. I feel like it's not pushed as much as it used to be when like Avatar was new. I mean, the original Avatar was new, you know, that sort of thing. So,
you know, my thing with 3D in cinema is that it needs to be there to enhance the movie and not a gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same with, you know, if they bring back like that whole lenticular thing that the 3DS had or any other sort of 3D technology, it needs to be an enhancement and not a gimmick.
Dark Tetsuya, speaking of probably the most gimmicky 3D, or if I say 4D experience I've ever seen, the 3D I miss is like they did for Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. I don't know if they do that for movies anymore.
Do not mess with that, because it was Rick Moranis and Eric Idle.
But remember,
Python fame.
Remember, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience was a thing. But I would say the first 4D was Captain EO. Before that, remember, this Captain EO before that. That was the first 4D.
Well,
so
I wish I had gone to the original Captain EO. I kind of am sad that I missed it, but I did like the revival. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, Captain EO is pinnacle.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like I
actually Angelica Houston being a goddess. Hello.
I still kind of believe Captain EO needs a place in Disney Park somewhere. I understand they give it a lot of real estate, but I feel like Captain EO, they should do at least one showing a day. Like there's always like so many of us of a certain age, you know, despite however you feel about Michael Jackson at this point and everything, the thing is Captain EO is like
amazing.
It's childhood.
A staple, an icon.
A staple, exactly.
It's unique.
It is unique.
And thankfully,
it's going to change the world. We are going to change the world.
So, some people, by the way, have gone in and done sort of their own remaster of it where they combine the 3D elements into a single, you know, 2D experience, and the whole thing is up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I go back and watch it at least once a month.
I'm pretty sure, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience is all on YouTube as well at this point. You know, fan cams basically, but it's there.
I have two things that I go back and watch at least once a month. Three. One of them is Captain EO. Mm-hmm. The other one is Interstellar 5555, and the other one is The Princess Bride.
Inconceivable.
You keep saying that word. Do you even know what it means? No, I do not think it means what you think it means.
Back to the topic we were talking about, Wii U and 3DS. So the stores are closing. I'm curious for my co-hosts. Is there anything you're going to miss? Or are you just kind of like, let it die. Let it die. For me, I mean, this is one of those things that seems inevitable in this day and age. But obviously, there is hurt feelings because for game preservation, this stinks because there were so many digital-only titles. And what we see Nintendo doing is not what we see Microsoft or even to some extent Sony doing, which is having that digital catalog be available when you buy a new system, thanks to backwards compatibility. You know, I think we can all cross our fingers and hope and pray, thoughts, prayers, rainbows, wishes, whatever you want to, that there's gonna be something on the future Nintendo console, but I'm not gonna hold my breath with that whole thing. And so that's the part that's kind of sad, is that these games will essentially be lost to time. Although with preservationist efforts like what, you know, this YouTuber did in downloading the entire archive. And let's be real, the ethical question of is piracy and emulation an ethical thing to do? That argument changes significantly once the stores are closed and literally your ability to buy these games and pay money for them goes away. And I'll let you fill in the gaps with what I'm saying. But it's... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, if things lately have taught me anything, it's that ethics are subjective these days.
True. And I would just say, like, if I'm going to play these games, I do not feel bad about emulating them after March 27th.
Well, and the thing about it to also add is that the intent and the impact are two different things.
Mm.
And if the overall... if the intent is good and the impact comes out positively, then yeah, great. But you can always have good intent and have the end result come out pretty shitty.
Yeah.
And of course, as far as what that end result is going to be, that is going to be another subjective thing. Nintendo might see it one way. We as the public will see it another. What's going to be the prevailing thought?
Okay. Fixation Gaze in chat says, once you cannot buy it legitimately, it's out the window, honestly. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's my theory. I agree with that. But, but I mean, again, we're looking at I think that if they're going to take it off of the market, they know there's going to be a quote black market.
Some people, and to be fair, some people, and they have a right to this opinion, say that no, you're still not in an ethically good place by doing that, because this is similar to how Disney used to vault, I'll come back to the minute, used to vault their old movies. Remember that? You had to buy that movie on VHS in the little clamshell case, and it would go back into the Disney vault as of, you know, whatever date. You could never buy it again, or they'd be up to collectors, you know, sky high. But... important footnote, Disney came around eventually. Once the technology was in place, guess what Disney Plus offers? There's no more vault. You can watch everything on Disney Plus, except for the controversial ones, you know, the things that Disney is not going to put out, period.
They think should be released as a teaching element.
Yeah, but that's, because if I didn't say that, someone would, but otherwise, for the most part, you know, those titles are open and available on Disney Plus, as far as things like The Little Mermaid to Snow White to Treasure Planet and whatever. They're all available on Disney Plus at this point. So finally, they came around eventually. And the reason why I say that is because maybe someday Nintendo does the same thing. Maybe Disney shows that as well. DJ Ram S says, I have a bunch of those clamshell VHS Disney movies. Those clamshells are icons of the 80s and 90s, as far as I'm concerned. Those are icons of the 80s. So, you know what? They're still collector values and things like that. So,
I wish that I had still had my copy of Pete's Dragon. I mean, it's since come out on DVD, but for the longest time, the only way you could get that was on VHS. And I loved that movie as a kid. Yeah. I love Helen Reddy. That was the movie that made me love Helen Reddy.
All right. Well, while we reminisce, let's take a moment and reminisce our past week as we talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. So, Dark Sakura, how was your gaming week?
Pretty eventful. Of course, I played a lot of Dead by Daylight, and I played it with Fixie. Hi, Fixie. And Gwen and Shayla.
You have a little squad now. I always see you playing
We call ourselves Team Yeet.
Team Yeet. Yeah. I lurk.
Yeah.
You don't know I'm there, but I'm there.
And there is a video on YouTube of the origin day of Team Yeet and a farming ghost face. So. But yeah, we do our thing. I actually adepted Sadako on Sunday, and I don't know if it was because, like, I remembered, like, all of my skills very suddenly, or I had a bunch of flops. It's probably a combination of both, but I got my Sadako adept without really trying. That's 5 out of how many killers now? I still need to regain my... I've got all the survivors adepted. I played a lot of Marvel Midnight Suns. I played it on stream last night because I learned that my controller is incompatible with my SNES emulator. I have actually ordered a controller specifically for my SNES emulator. And again, I can legally play these games on stream because I own the original Super Famicom cartridges. The end. So, yeah, Letterman jackets. We're going to do Letterman jackets. Ranjan, I don't remember. I'll tell you offline. But for what controller I ordered. But at any rate, I also have played a bunch of pinball, and I got into a very fun discussion about pinball with the one and only Brianna Wu. We're online friends now. And I am hoping that I actually get to play pinball with her. I think that would be absolutely fun. She's got quite the collection. I was very impressed.
Isn't she on the other coast? Didn't she run for office out in Maryland or something?
Well, I mean, things happen. I mean, if there's a convention,
it's a small
or anything,
world. Yeah, you never know.
I'm still planning on going out that way.
PAX East is this weekend. Speaking of that part of the country,
weekend.
I know, but you know, it just reminded me. PAX East is this weekend.
But we talked pinball, and I really want to play the Halloween pinball, and she's got one. Oh, I want to play it. But I've been playing a lot of Beatles Mania and World Cup Soccer because, you know, World Cup Soccer is my favorite. I also have been playing my stupid word game, and, like, it's sad when I can solve, like, one of the, quote, super hard puzzles in 20 seconds. And what else did I do? Oh yeah, I played a little Jockey Crush, the last in the Crush series. You know, we had Alien Crush.
Oh yeah, you've highlighted that before. I'm almost positive in the classic game segment.
Jockey Crush is the SNES one, which was the final entry in the Crush series of pinball games. I just like how it starts. You have all the demon face, and it scrolls out. It goes Jockey Crush, and. What else did I play? Because I played other stuff, and I don't remember. Yeah, I think that might be it. I can't remember what else. I knew that there was something else on my list, but I don't remember, so fuck it.
All right.
I played a lot of Dead by Daylight.
All right, let's go over to Loki. How was your gaming week?
It's just Minecraft. I'm still working on my project. I finally got to the part where I'm actually filming stuff and building in the SMP now. So hoping to have an episode out very soon because it's been a very long time.
What happened with the Minecraft contest? Because wasn't that over on the 15th?
The cutoff was on the 15th. They haven't announced anything yet.
Oh, okay.
So they're just taking their time.
Fair.
So probably this week sometime.
All right. Well, still crossing my fingers for you, even if it's just a shout out. Hey,
it's
acknowledgement.
Just gonna be a shout out.
It's a senpai notice me moment, so it's fine. Anything else for your gaming week?
No, that's it. I'm eyeing up stuff on the Steam sale that I probably will buy and not play.
I keep forgetting that there was a Steam sale that just started. Ooh, that's dangerous. All right.
I keep seeing Final Fantasy VII Integrate in there. I was like, sure.
Maybe. Something I've been watching, Alan's been doing some streaming of that on his channel, and he's his whole thing now is he mods games and streams them with the mods in. I suppose I should shout out my husband here. He's going to do a stream on Tuesday, so he's been playing Mass Effect 2 modded, and sorry Jamie, I think this conflicts with one of your streams, but Alan's been working very hard on this, so I'm going to plug it. He's going to beat Mass Effect 2 modded on Tuesday at 10:30 Eastern and do the ending sequence. But what's special about it, he's been modding it so that he can romance Thane, because there's actually dialogue, I guess, that is there that was not in the actual release. So Thane was romanceable by a lady in Mass Effect 2, but not by a male character. This mod has unlocked the male and Thane romance. So he's going to show that on stream on Tuesday and beat the game, which of course... What's that?
There was dialogue?
Yeah, apparently there was dialogue like there was in the first game for a Caden male romance. Something like that, where there's ghost dialogue or something. So,
oh yeah, like it was in there and then coded out?
Yep, exactly. So
yeah, that sucks.
But thanks
that they do that.
Thanks to modders, it's back. So that's something he's going to be doing on Tuesday. And if there's just so many streams you want to watch and you can't choose, he'll be happy if you watch the VOD. So, and that'll all be highlighted as well. So there's that. So let's see. Otherwise, my gaming week, the types of games I've been playing, streaming, whatever it is. Theatrhythm, continuing on with that. The World Ends With You DLC came out this week. I streamed a little bit of that earlier this week. Really good music. And I'm not super familiar with that series, I have to admit. Like, I'm familiar that it exists. I just didn't really play them start to finish. There's some really good songs in that. There's some bangers in that game. So I was really happy with the DLC for Theatrhythm. I've been playing a little bit of that. I also continuing just a little bit of Dead by Daylight, not as much as Dark Sakura, but maybe a game a day or something like that, just to keep my skills up to speed.
I remembered my other game. I played Among Us.
Oh, that's right. You've been getting into that lately.
I've been playing with Raven McPherson, Artie, and all them.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no,
I just
you're fine.
Remembered.
Mike Def says, glad they included with World Ends With You some of the songs in Neo. Yeah, it's three from the original and three from Neo. So it's some good round of DLC. I enjoyed it. Very much looking forward to the Nier DLC, which will be next week. Definitely will play that as well. I've also been playing No Man's Sky. I'm really close to finishing the expedition. If I hadn't... So unfortunately... I fucked myself on stream, not in that kind of way. I'm not talking about an OF. I'm talking about when you get yourself into a logic problem live on stream. And the logic problem was in No Man's Sky, the logic problem was you can only craft material at your base in this latest mission. I landed on a planet and I landed and I was out of starship fuel. I could not craft more starship fuel because I was nowhere near my base. I would have had to have walked 4 hours on the planet to get to my base. So what I had to do, I had to construct an all new base in order to build the starship fuel so I could take off. So Questbuster says, I'm a little halfway through that expedition. So learn from Uncle Rob what not to do. And here's how to get yourself out of those situations. So Questbuster, always keep the material on you to build one extra base. And it's a lot of chromatic metal and a lot, because they amped it up from what it normally, usually it costs next to nothing to build a computer base. But this time they amped it up to like, it's like 250 chromatic metal and like 500 ferret dust or something, or it's like magnetized ferrite or something. It's enhanced. So, always keep the material on you so that you don't screw yourself over like I did. Because if I hadn't done that and had to spend 45 minutes fixing that situation I got myself in, I probably would have beat on stream. So, yeah. Questbuster says, I ran into a similar problem early on when I remembered that I could only craft near a base and I was kind of far away. As long as you keep the mats on you for a base at all times, you can always just craft a new base. It doesn't have to be the base that the game sends you to in that expedition. That's something I learned. So, by the way, that expedition only has 2 or 3 weeks left in it. So if you haven't started it yet, I would highly encourage you to. And I believe the Switch has expeditions now. Some of you on the Switch may have to tell me if I'm wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure they added that with the big VR update that pushed for PlayStation, is that Switch now has expeditions. Actually, it might have been before that for the Encores. So Switch, you can do the expeditions on. So... other big important one that I left out of my game of week. I got to talk about this because I played so much of it this weekend. I'm probably going cross-eyed. And that is, I played the shit out of the Diablo 4 beta, which that went up this weekend for those that either pre-ordered the game, which was me, or stomached a KFC double down, which is other people.
Was it good or did it Diablo?
It is fantastic. It is fantastic. I am so hyped for Diablo. So I may have had an inkling that this game was already in good shape because there was a closed beta. I can't say I was in the if I was in the closed beta, I'm not allowed to say I was. But now that there's an open beta, we can be open and talk a little more about Diablo 4 and what's so great about it. I think if you were put off by Diablo 3 in some ways, I think this is the sequel you wanted to Diablo 2, because Diablo 2, there's a lot more of Diablo 2's roots in this game, and the way that it's, not to say, because I love Diablo 3 and I still love this one, because there's a lot of quality of life stuff that Diablo 3 brought in that now is in Diablo 4, but they do different things. Like now it's like the open world and they have all these different systems, and the storytelling they have really amped up. That was most impressive to me. Like the way they do some of the artistic directions and the cutscenes and stuff is like stuff in The Witcher. Like it's really good. This game has been in development forever, but it's showing. Like all of these different dungeons that you do, although yes, there's only so many background patterns you see in a Diablo game, it's varied enough, these dungeons, to feel like you're doing something new. I played multiplayer with some other people that were in the open beta. It played very well. My only concern was that I got some really bad graphics stuttering playing on high-end graphics on my less than a year old computer. However, when I turned it down to medium, it was fine. It is a beta, and those are the types of problems that are usually present in a beta. So I'm not like, I've already dropped the $100 for the Super Mega Deluxe Edition of this game. So look. This doesn't, like, they've already got me.
I have no room to judge, given that I paid $100 for Midnight Suns.
So, look, any little complaints I have here, or if you're going to go, well, it's just a beta, Rob, you shouldn't judge again. No, I did not judge the game, because I've paid a lot of money for the full retail release of this game already. So, but Questbuster in chat says the world boss is horrifying. I haven't seen the world boss, but I have seen world quests, and that's a new thing to Diablo. They actually put in MMO like elements, but it's not an MMO. It's weird. Like it's seamless for Diablo. It works really well. The open beta is next weekend, and you don't need a KFC double down so I would encourage, if you're curious about it, check out the open beta next weekend. It's only going to be 3 days, but that's your chance to see if it's for you or not. Bobby Blackwell says, are there colors? Actually, yeah, I know the game has been getting a little bit of flack because the open world is mostly a snowy world. So it's very plain, white, snowed out. But when you start to get into some of the dungeons that are shiny and have the metallic effects and the fountains of blood, because this is a Diablo game and it is nasty. I'm not a big violent, so there are parts of this game that make me go, ugh. But usually those are only in the cutscenes. Usually as you're playing the game, the camera's pulled back so far, you don't see graphic violence. It's implied. It's all implied. When you're playing the game. In cutscenes, it's more than implied. so I will caution, but you can skip cutscenes if you are not interested in that. You just want to click a lot and get loot. There is that. So Dark Tetsuya says, I'll probably get it on console, especially if the console versions have local co-op. I believe they do. Don't quote me on that, but I'll tell you what it did have, even during this beta, and will have in the full release, that the other games needed badly: crossplay. So remember I said I partied with friends? I played with Shane and Extifer and Extifer's husband. Myself, Extifer's husband, and I think Extifer were all on PC, but Shane was on PS5, and we all played together seamlessly. And thanks to the PS5 Discord integration, we were all on a Discord call. So, nice. Yeah, it's the 2023, we are eating good in 2023 when it comes to video games. And, like, honestly, if it was just Diablo 4, I would be like, this is it. This is the game I'm going to play more than any other this year. I can't say that. Theatrhythm's already come out, and you see I play too much of that as it is. There is also Zelda has that sequel coming out this year, Tears of the Kingdom. That's like out 2 weeks before Diablo. 3 weeks after Diablo, Final Fantasy 16. Later this winter, supposedly, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. Like, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. This year is going to be unprecedented for the level of games that we're getting. And if these other games have the quality of Diablo 4 and the polish that 3 years of a pandemic and working extra long on the game has brought, holy shit. Yeah, and folks in chat, Mike Def says Street Fighter 6. Bobby Blackwolf says Hi-Fi Rush. Already a surprise hit coming. You're right. We don't even know the surprise hits that are coming. Like this is a year. And then that doesn't even count games we can't stop playing. Dead by Daylight, Dark Sakura, or Final Fantasy 14 self call out, you know, or Minecraft Loki call out, whatever it is. There are still games that we still keep playing because they keep patching them, enhancing them, and making them good. Oh my God, Questbuster reminded me, Starfield. I have to quit my job. Just kidding. I love my job. I really do. And that's what pays for games. But when am I going to have the time to do it? I'm not. So this is...
You are cracking me the hell up.
Why?
Just because you're being so funny.
But it's true. This is such a good year to be excited about video games. There really is something for everyone. This year in particular. And I don't know what it is about this year. It really is there. They're still yelling them off in chat. Exoprimal coming out. Persona re-releases coming out. Cyberpunk, for those that got into that, is going to be getting, I believe, an expansion. Octopath Traveler 2 just came out. This is a great year for games. Shedding a tear.
Yeah.
All right. But yes, Diablo.
Will your heart go on, Rob?
Near, far, wherever you are. But Diablo 4... Yes, bolded, underlined, italicized. I'm excited. So there it is. All right. Yes, actually, the open beta this weekend didn't even have Druid or Necromancer in it. Those will be in the beta next weekend. So I fully expect that everybody's going to be Druid or Necromancer, or the people that didn't play this weekend that are finally getting around to doing Sorcerer or whatever they pick. So it's going to be an interesting. By the way, your progress in the beta does not carry over to the live game, except if you get to level 20 in the beta, you get a wolf doggy that you carry around with you in your little backpack. It's a cosmetic reward. So I'm trying to show a image of what that looks like here. So we're live on Twitch. I found one. How do I get it to come up here? Sorry.
You seem very excited about the whole thing.
I'm doing live. I've been waiting for this game a very, very long time, and it's finally here, and I'm very excited. This is not the best representation as we're live, because it's I can't get the GIF to play any larger. Oh, maybe I do that. There we go. It's actually a little wolf dog that sleeps in a little cradle in your back. That is the reward you get for getting to level 20, right?
Oh, my God. I don't even like Diablo, and I want to play this now.
Here's the thing, and this is the dangerous part, because... Diablo 4, they're not supposed to be doing the same stuff they did with Immortal, where it's all, because Immortal was a free-to-play game. That's old news. The experience, you buy it and whatever, it's all in one. But they're still going to be doing battle passes and all that stuff for cosmetics. But here's the thing. Diablo kills it with cosmetics. Case and point, what I just showed. Like, there are lots of people like Dark Sakura, lots of people that are like, I wasn't caring about Diablo until you showed me that.
Honestly, it's still not enough for me to play it.
Fine.
But I seriously had the thought.
You had the thought. You had an impure thought.
I did. That just moment of absolute weakness was like, oh, what?
All right. Let's see. We're going to move on and get into some other stuff that's going on in the gaming world and talk about what's up in news this week. First, though, I want to address this because we had a redeem. So we have a redeem on our channel. If you want to turn in some points, you can get a post-show shout-out. And Dark Tetsuya actually redeemed one of those. But I am going to upgrade this for free on the house to a during-the-show shout-out. Usually that means it hits the podcast feed because... this is an important one to state, and that is, if at all possible, can I donate this one to my wife, Mishkins? Today's her birthday. Absolutely,
happy
you can.
Birthday.
And I want to wish a very happy birthday to Mishkins, but we all call Mish for short, who has been such a support, not just here at the VOG Network, but I know I see her on my streams. I'm sure she pops into to all the other faces around the Voice Geeks Network and on Twitter and all of that stuff. Such a support of the network. So this one's upgraded on the house because I want to personally wish you a happy birthday and hope you have had a wonderful one. And may the next year bring lots of awesome games. Spoiler alert, it's going to. So
we love you, Mishi.
All right. Well, now let's get into some gaming news. What's going on in the industry? Ooh, here's a big one to start us off about the place we call home on Sunday nights, right, Loki?
Yes, apparently the CEO of Twitch, Emmett Shear, is no longer at the company after 16 years working there. Basically, he has resigned, I think having to do with raising his children. Basically, he had posted a blog post saying, with my first child just born, I've been reflecting on my future at Twitch. Twitch often feels like a child to me that I've been raising well. And while I will always want to be there if Twitch needs me, at 16 years old, it feels to me that Twitch is ready to move out of the house and venture alone. So, cool. Focus on family. I don't know who else they have coming in, though, to take his place.
It's out there. It's somebody with the company today. Keep digging. It's in there somewhere. It's currently...
Someone.
Yes. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says he's still at the company. He's an advisor now, but that, you know,
That's fine.
Sometimes that can be more of a ceremonial title,
Basically he said, you know, and it's family. He says, with the arrival of my son, the time has come for me to focus my energies on building that tiny little startup family. And I'm ready to dedicate my energies there. Cool. I think you should.
Yeah. I mean, you can't fault him for the reasons. The timing is certainly, I mean, there's always going to be people that read a lot into the timing, right? Because of all the things that Twitch has gone through in the past year. I think more so the fact that the YouTube CEO just stepped down a couple weeks ago. That's the one where I'm like, well, that's interesting. But I mean,
he's going to do it too.
It doesn't like any time that he stepped down, there's going to be people trying to read the tea leaves going, well, what really happened? Was he forced out? You know, and
well,
that whole thing.
I mean, it's probably like, you know, the drama that was last year and stuff probably doesn't hurt as well. Like, I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm leaving for family, but all this other drama, if I could be away from that as well, cool.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like a win-win there, I guess.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat points out Dan Clancy was the president of Twitch and is now the CEO. He took over immediately. So not a huge changing of the guard. To go from president to CEO, I would not call like a major culture shift. This isn't like what happened at Twitter. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. This is just, you know, obviously somebody who is already in a very high role just going to a different role. So I wouldn't expect a lot changes as to, you know, what's coming up in the future and all of that stuff. It's just kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, this is interesting because, you know, Emmett dates back to the Justin TV days and where Twitch was born and all of this, and now is leaving. But it's hard to stay at a company for even 15 years. I think when you start to get to that point, hell, I was at a job for 14 years, and that's when I finally started to realize that nothing else was ever going to happen if I didn't change companies. And I did. And that's great. You know, and not to say, because some people do end up with a company they love and they do stay longer than 14 years. That's great. I'm talking about most people, you know, when they invest years and years in a company, this is the point where they start to kind of look around. What else do I want to say that I did, you know, professionally? And there's probably some of that going on as well. And that's okay.
There's not much more you can do once you're CEO of the company.
That's right. So, that's true.
Where do you go from there?
Questbuster says it could also be he just wants to leave the circus behind for a new chapter. Twitch is constantly under pressure from Amazon to turn a profit, from what I understand, plus dealing with all the dirty laundry aired over the years about the culture. SSG100 Matt says, I've had several coworkers leave right after having a kid. I've heard other folks doing so as well. Having a kid seems to be a transition spot for a lot of folks. Sure. Tiger Claw says, I remember when Justin TV was doing the real life stuff, then switching to the gaming stuff, only to go back to the real life stuff when they wanted more people to join. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, this whole thing. But, you know, here we are all these years later. But I would say, just going back to what Questbuster says, I think the interesting thing that could happen is you might see some other changes to try to monetize this platform a little more. And I don't know if that's going to be, people are going to be forced onto that's my worry. That's always in the back of my head. So when we tape live here at the Voice of Geeks Network, I always play ads for a couple of minutes because that's how we get the pre-roll ads turned off. So before we actually start, I play pre-roll ads for a couple minutes. So that way for about 40 minutes, no ads actually play. They're off now. So if people come into the channel, they see ads before they see us.
Rob, it's been changed a little bit because when I run, I always start with a 3-minute ad for my 5-minute intro on my stream.
Yeah.
And it takes out 62 minutes.
Yes. So they did change it recently. So you used to only be able to do a minute and a half of ads up to 30 minutes. Now you can do 3 minutes of ads up to 60 minutes. And I do the same on my personal stream. However, here at VOG, because we're still transitioning between Bobby's show and our show, and we don't want people to be stuck in ads too long, I capped it at 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a normal TV break, and that's 40 minutes of pre-roll ads. So that's enough. And then that way we're not stalling too long between Bobby's show and kind of keeping the things moving here. But yeah, but that whole thing is still optional for broadcasters. My fear is 3 minutes of ads an hour is going to become mandatory. That is my concern, because Twitch has no problem, if you opt into it, cutting off your fee. And they're trying to sweeten the deal. They're trying to get people to opt into it by offering more incentives. And I get it. There's a lot of people that are doing it. It's, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But I feel like Twitch is going to make that mandatory. I can't help but dread that. I wish
it technically kind of is. I mean, the ads themselves, they're going to happen whether you want them to or not.
That's true.
You can just jump in and take control.
Yes, that's true.
When you want to. And I have a disclaimer in mind that, hey, if you don't like it, sub or Twitch Turbo. But still, you know.
Tiger Claw in chat says, how long before they set up a subscription where you have to pay to broadcast on Twitch? I'm going to put this out in the ether. And Bobby's going to kill me when he sees me at Dragon Con, but I'm willing to put this out there. If they wanted to charge VOG Network to broadcast on Twitch ad free, a reasonable amount of money, let's say $19.99 a month, and we could broadcast ad free, we'd do it. We have enough support from you guys that come in with the subs and the bits and all that stuff. Again, a reasonable price. It was like $99.99 a month. No way.
No.
But like if it was $19.99 a month or something, I'd pay it to turn off the ads completely on this channel. I'd be willing to do it. So, well,
and if it was, Rob, if it was $99.99 a year, that would be actually even better.
Sure, sure. I'd be willing to do that too. Yeah, okay. Bobby says, why would I kill you for something I agree with? For making a definitive statement without consulting with you first, but thankfully you agree with me on this one. So, but yeah, usually I know better than to make definitive statements about the future of VOG Network. By the way, did you know we're going to be getting a new... No, forget it. I'm not... All right.
Y'all are... special.
But anyway, I would see that as, you know, I hope Twitch considers that. If they're going to make the ads mandatory, honestly, let me pay a nominal fee to just dodge all of that shit. I would be willing to pay it. So, because I think
I would too.
Yeah, the support of I don't have a gigantic audience on my personal channel, and that's okay. I don't want one. I have enough support where it would work itself out. I'd essentially be able to broadcast for free. You know, and I'm okay with that. That's all I want.
I want a gigantic audience.
Tiger Claw says, now what if you pay the subscription to broadcast on Twitch and part of that subscription allows you to play music without getting copyright stricken? That would be a very smart thing for Twitch to do. They should make those deals and allow people to pay money to, you know, license the music and do that. That would be fantastic. I think a lot of people would be very excited about that, especially how this is growing as a, you know, music in real life and, you know, you get DJ sets and all that as it's growing as a platform like that. I think that's actually a great idea. Those agreements are going to be hard to get because the record companies are greedy as fuck.
They're never going to do it.
And they're never going to do it.
I mean,
but it's like, nice. It's like, not Twitch's fault. In that department,
what a bunch of us have to do now is we can still play our music during the live stream and they don't seem to care.
Yeah, you have to set it in OBS a certain way. Yeah,
yeah, you just can't have it as a part of your VOD.
Yeah,
which kind of gets me in trouble because I like sing along with my music.
Yeah, and one day I accidentally on my personal stream I did something where I was using a new scene and I hadn't made the Spotify and the rest of my audio separate on that scene, so I actually played it and I got muted. Like that. So it is what, but yeah. It's not like it's my entire stream. It's just my opening segment, but it is what it is. So,
well, and I would like to say for streamers who are on Macs like me, if you want to know how to do it on a mat because it's a little bit more involved, let me know. I'll help you out.
It's actually not that hard either because we used very similar technology when we were all in the same place using the Mac Mini to broadcast. Yeah. That's how we would strip the localized audio out of the feed. We had to separate it to get it to work, but it worked. So,
yeah, I used Loopback and EQ Mac.
Yeah.
I think Loopback is like essential.
Yeah. All righty. Let's move on. Let's talk about another video game that has left its exclusive window for the Sony PlayStation, and it's now going to be on its way to Xbox. And that is Ghostwire Tokyo. Ghostwire Tokyo launched on PC and PlayStation 5. This was interesting because it was a Bethesda title, but, you know, Microsoft bought Bethesda, but this was one of the ones that still had an exclusive window. So now that that window is up, you bet it's coming to Xbox Series X and S on April 12th. There will also be new content because, of course, they want to sweeten the pot here now that Bethesda is a Microsoft subsidiary. Tango Gameworks made this game, notable because they made The Evil Within and have had a lot of success this year with Hi-Fi Rush. So Ghostwire Tokyo was also one of their games. And this is where, you know, it's you're going around Tokyo and it's a supernatural sort of thing.
We wanted to play this.
Yeah, the reviews were a little mixed at launch because they were saying that the combat was a little samey and there were some mechanical building blocks that were recycled. But some people are really into it, and some people think the Japan's folklore that plays into the story is done very well. So there's, you know, there's kind of, you know, mixed. Mixed means some really liked it and some didn't. Eurogamer in one of their reviews said, "I can say that, dull combat aside, exploring Shibuya never bores." So there's that. Anyway, Game Pass will have the games as well on the 12th of April, and there will be new content. It's called the Spider's Thread Update. That's extended scenes for the main story, new locations to explore, including a school area. Oh, we love a spooky school. And new enemies like the Silent Gaze, the Sanguine Dancer, and Retribution. There's also new skills.
I'm sorry, I thought you said Silent Gaze, and I'm like, no one I've ever met has been silent.
G-A-Z-E, Dark Sakura.
I know, I thought of it afterwards, but that's the image that popped into my head. I was like, it's... And then my brain went, it's the gay version of Silent Hill.
There's new skills coming as well.
My brain was in a weird spot.
No, I love it. Anyway, coming out for the Xbox on April 12th, not surprised at all to see that, you know, now that this Bethesda, you know, signed before they were bought by Microsoft, it's getting a little enhanced and, you know, there'll probably be more people to check it out this time around. It's going to be very interesting. So we'll see. Maybe the game will get a second peek or something like that. So, all right. Let's move on and talk about this next story. This is always an interesting time of year, right, Dark Sakura?
Yeah, we are coming up on the Video Game Hall of Fame voting and ballots and things. Who's going to get in there? We have the 12 finalists right now. There's Age of Empires, Angry Birds, Barbie Fashion Designer, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, Computer Space, FIFA International Soccer, GoldenEye 007, the one that makes me motion sick, The Last of Us, NBA 2K, Quake, Wii Sports, and Wizardry. Mm. Now, it's pretty hard to narrow down. I mean, there's a few on these. I'm like, no, they don't know. No,
yeah, there's some either. I could definitely take off.
But there's some on the list that I would think are kind of middling. And then there's some I think definitely have a place there. You know, I could make a list. But as far as, you know, the thing about the games is that these are games that are supposed to have had a big influence on the popular culture of the video game industry. Notable for different things. Like, I mean, there's a very big reason Barbie Fashion Designer is on there. You may go, oh, it's a Barbie game. But it was one of the first games marketed to female gamers, you know, to break that sort of hold that the industry had of only marketing to male gamers. You know, Wii Sports, we know why that's on there, because it brought in an older crowd. You know, Computer Space was one of the first arcade releases, 1971. I might have almost done this game before, but it was basically taking these types of games out of, you know, people's, you know, computer labs, pretty much. You know, we've got all sorts of notoriety. And of course, there's always the fan voting that's online through March 22nd. So we only have a couple more days. And that's the player's choice ballot. The ones with the most public votes from one ballot will be counted alongside the ballot submitted by members of the Committee of Experts. And then they will be conducted in a virtual ceremony on May 4th.
Well, Dark Sakura, since you mentioned you could make a list, let's put that to the test here, live on air. And so what we've done, we've actually taken those 12 games in my very high technological WordPad document live on air. We've actually taken the 12 games. And I'd like us now, kind of as hosts here, we're going to each go around and pick the five that we would vote for and why. So in other words, which of these queens should go home tonight and why? No. Which five games would you...
A list.
Would you move into? So it's a kind of an interesting version of listless, where we're changing the rules a little bit, but we're doing it the way they're going to vote. So which five would you keep and why? So I'll start with Dark Sakura.
Okay. So, and I will admit I had honorable mentions, like GoldenEye was an honorable mention, but I actually started with Barbie Fashion Designer because of its, the marketing behind it is it really did break a mold. It was fully marketed toward a completely different demographic than what had normally been advertised to, and it belongs on there.
Okay.
Last of Us, number one. That game has had a pretty massive cultural impact, and you know, in the years that it's been out, we've got a TV show based on it that I understand is really good. I need to marathon it when I can ugly cry by myself. And yes, both of those games made me super ugly cry. It tackled some very important, you know, social issues in it. And honestly enough, it's a game that has that lasting power. It's an instant classic. I'm going to then go to Quake, because not just because of what Quake is as an FPS, because we had others before that. You know, we had Doom, we had Hexen. But Quake was really the one that I think brought it out of a more niche area. And on top of that, the modding, all the mods. And we've got, you know, so many references in pop culture to Quake, not to mention we have MC Hawkins with Quake Master, just saying.
True, true.
You know, so I think that Quake definitely belongs on the list.
All right.
Wizardry. I put it on there because it's a classic. It spawned so many sequels, and it's been sort of like a granddaddy of its genre. And then last, I added Computer Space for the reasons before. It was an early public arcade title. It had that yellow, twisty-looking cabinet with it looked very 70s chic. You know, I think it was great. But it brought those games out of, you know, basically the nerd caves, you know, those old IBMs, and brought it out into the public eye, you know, sitting there amongst the pinball tables and, you know, pre-Space Invaders, you know, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
So that one, I think, if not for Computer Space, we might not have had stuff like Space Invaders and... Mm-hmm. Galaga, Galaxian, you know, all of those sorts of games. I think that these are all notable for those reasons.
All right. So we've put some gold stars up by the ones that Dark Sakura has named. So Loki, let's go over to you. What would be the five from this list that you would induct into the Hall of Fame?
Let's see. I would probably do Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, since it basically... set the gold standard for modern FPS shooter games. I mean, it was really pivotal, considering that the first three Call of Duty games were all World War II games, then they pivoted to it, and who would have thought that it would have been extremely popular? So, for sure, Call of Duty. Then I'd probably do Mirror Quake, because, you know, it's one of the first polygonal FPS games. It's just a really awesome game that basically, you know, helped propel the genre forward. Wii Sports.
The ASCII mode?
Yeah, I mean, They have that I guess.
I don't know if I'd just, like, Hall of Fame that part. You were starting to say Wii Sports, Logie?
Yeah, Wii Sports, because it made games more accessible and brought in a whole bunch of people that wouldn't normally play games. Let's see. I would say probably GoldenEye, because I know that was a very popular multiplayer game. You know, definitely pushed, you know, split screen multiplayer quite a bit.
I think it really also pushed the capabilities of the N64. That's why I almost put it on my list.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I'm not familiar with Wizardry. I guess Computer Space, because it's one of the earlier arcade games. So that's definitely pivotal as well. And well, I got one more left.
Nope. That was it.
Nope.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yep. There's 10 stars up on the board. So now we're going to me. All right. So here's what I would do. I would say number one, by far the biggest one on this list for me, you know, everybody has opinions. That's fine. For me, the biggest one on this list that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame is Wii Sports. I think when history looks back on what gaming was in the aughts, I think, you know, Wii and everything that this game did for pushing an entire, platform forward and really selling Nintendo's, you know, silly named console and all that forward, I think Wii Sports is going to be seen as, you know, pivotal for that. Number two on my list, I would say Quake, actually. So that's one that all three of us are going to end up saying. I think you have several shooters that are represented on this list. I think Quake is the one. Again, it really defined an era of PC gaming. And I think, you know, as was already brought up, the mods, especially when you consider things like Team Fortress that then turned into their own things, I think is huge. So I think Quake, absolutely. It looks like that's the only one all three of us are probably going to say is one of the huge ones on the list. Other titles. I would say The Last of Us. Might be a little bit early, and I understand maybe some of the concerns with that. With The Last of Us, but I do think that especially with the success of the TV show, and I think when people kind of look back on gamings and TV and all that medium and stuff, I think The Last of Us is going to hold up very strong. So I think as far as like a strong contemporary choice, The Last of Us would definitely be on my list. So that was 1, 2, 3. So number four for me, I'm actually going to say Wizardry. I think, again, there's a really an era of early PC gaming that Wizardry really influenced. And I think as far as we look at, you know, role-playing games as they were developed by Japanese companies and role-playing games as they were developed by American companies, Wizardry was really, you know, the roots of where the American developed ones kind of ended up going as a result. And then the last one I would put on my list, and this may surprise you, I'm actually not going to go with what you think, and I'm going to put Barbie Fashion Designer as my number five. I think kind of as Dark Sakura already kind of hit on the main points of that, as much as you might look at that and go, LOL Barbie, I think it's important to note that, again, this was the game industry acknowledging that there were more people that games needed to be accessible to and open to and targeted to bring into the gaming world. And I think really just, you know, set again a standard for an entire genre of Nancy Drew type games and, you know, things that followed it in the PC era. So those are my five.
Very tropey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
it is very tropey, but again, it's the nith event.
Yeah,
significant.
It's significant.
And so, yeah, and in my opinion, FIFA and NBA 2K should never be in the Hall of Fame ever because of the crap that they perpetuated in this industry. The absolute vile monetization practices that are FIFA Ultimate Team. To hell with that series. I'm sorry, but they put FIFA 23 as the box art, you know, so they're representing their most recent game as Hall of Fame worthy. No way. That is never going to make it in there. And the NBA 2K is just as bad, you know, with the monetization and just the half-assed development on these games, churning out the same thing year after year. No thanks. That does not belong in the Hall of Fame.
I would agree.
But don't mince words. Tell us how you really feel.
And honestly, for me, the only reason I didn't say Call of Duty and GoldenEye is that you already had another shooter on there. And pretty much all that's left after that is you have Angry Birds and Age of Empires. There's nothing wrong with either of those games, certainly. And again, I think Age of Empires also speaks certainly to a very distinct genre of game, I think, is already represented in the Hall of Fame. But I understand Age of Empires' significance. It's just, you know, you have to pick five from the 12, and that's just when it falls by the wayside. And it's a similar thing with Angry Birds. I understand that Angry Birds, as far as mobile titles go, is hugely significant. And with the movies and everything and the marketing and everything else, I get it. But I just don't know if I look back on that game fondly.
My thing about Angry Birds, why I think it is on the list, not just for what you were saying, is because it spawned a whole, I would say, push for the casual gamer in gaming culture. Mm-hmm. You know, the mobile gamer. And on top of that, it turned into a massive merchandising empire. You know, if anything, I would say that the Angry Birds franchise is one of the biggest ones to sort of show about the influence of video games in merchandising, in selling, you know, plushies and shirts and movies. And that's where I think there's notability there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, to me, the Hall of Fame isn't about what you think of fondly. It is more about what's influential in the gaming. And Angry right. Birds was huge with both of my parents. It's the only game they played because it was accessible to them in their 70s. Respect that viewpoint. I stand by my choices under the criteria that you provided. So, and everybody's going to look at that differently because everybody has their own little anecdotes. Wizardry, I think, looking at chat and just looking at the general comments in there, I think a lot of people that probably played it sort of kind of, but and other people have never played it, and so that maybe they don't understand why it's influential. And I get it, and I'm not faulting anyone for it. You know, it's just everybody's experiences is different a little bit, right? So anyway, let's take a look and see what we decided as show hosts should be the top five. And it looks like we actually kind of have a top six. It looks like the one we're all in agreement on is Quake. So Quake definitely makes the list. And then from there, you kind of have a five-way tie between Barbie Fashion Designer, Computer Space, Last of Us, Wii Sports, and Wizardry, kind of all barely make the list there. So it would come down to those choices for us here at Orange Lounge Radio. So that was fun.
I just also think it's very interesting hearing what we all think of these selections by going through a list like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes to show that different games mean different things to different people.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you can see the commonality amongst, you know, why we would choose what we chose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also speaks to how games can bring people together.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
I had to link that to my friend Annie of Saver and Stuff Mom Never Told You, because I know she's going to vote for Last of Us.
SSJ 100 Matt says, Loki and Rob have a point, and I agree about the monetization stuff, but I do think there is a place for licensed sports games. Sure. If it was NHL 93, I would have put it in my five. If it was right, NBA yeah, Jam, I would have put it in my five.
If they had represented those by like a certain version of the game, you know, an earlier one prior to all this stuff, yeah, I would be on board with that for sure. But they represented it with the most recent box art, and that could be just the decision of the article or whatever. But if you're represented by the most recent version, then I'm sorry. I'm not going to agree that that should be a Hall of Fame material.
Yeah. All right. But everybody can have their perspective. And so we'll be interesting to see what the five end up actually being. I think even though it didn't make our list, I do think Angry Birds makes the actual top five. I really do. I just I think voters will put, like, again, it's how I would have voted. I think the way voters will vote, I think it'll be Angry Birds, Wii Sports, Last of Us, Quake. I think those are all shoe-ins. The fifth one is going to be the wild card for me. I'm not sure if something like Computer Space gets in there, or Wizardry, or maybe surprises me and it is one of the sports titles. I don't know. So we'll see.
I really don't see how Computer Space couldn't make it in, given, you know, we've got quote experts voting on this. And I mean, if you're, you know, people who have been prominent in the industry and have followed the trends and hopefully would be sort of our same generation, or maybe even older, they might understand why something like that would belong in there. So I'm really hoping that we have that love given to our quote four parent games, you know?
So, all right. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to the next story, which we'll talk a little bit about maybe the future of games a little bit, although there's a little bit of what's old is new again in this, but I'll let Loki talk about it and then kind of say what I have to say on this.
Yeah, so they've got this new Fortnite Unreal Editor, or Unreal Editor for Fortnite. It's a PC app that's designed for developing and publishing games and experiences directly into Fortnite. They say that with many of Unreal 5's powerful tools and workflows at your fingertips, including custom asset import, modeling materials, VFX, sequencer, and controller, you'll have a whole new world of options for publishing games and experiences for Fortnite. And it sounds to me a little bit like almost like kind of a Roblox type thing. This also sounds very similar to, and I can't remember now the name of the platform that they have, but it's also Unreal Engine based, where you could build your own games out of kind of assets and stuff that they had as well. I don't know if that platform ever took off well, but I can imagine tying the Fortnite brand to it could be interesting, and also what exactly comes out of this, if they're going to try to, like, you know, morph Fortnite into kind of like a
Roblox
type of thing. I mean, could be neat, I guess. They're going to have all sorts of licensing problems like they did with like Roblox does, or just lets it run rampant. But there's some interesting stuff coming out of, like, Roblox, at least. You know, I know my kids have been playing this game called Frontline that's kind of a Call of Duty Modern Warfare shooter game that's in there that doesn't look like Roblox, which is kind of cool.
I'm curious to see what type of non-gaming art pieces, because, you know, in Fortnite, we've seen interesting things like the concerts, the launches of other media, you know, in there. I always refer to the Ariana Grande concert, but it really, like, that was the thing that got me to look at Fortnite and go, oh, wow, this really is kind of something different. Like, it's not just shooty bang bang. It's like interactive art piece. I'm excited to see that type of stuff from, like, indie artists that maybe tap into this and use this a little bit. I think it'd be very interesting.
I'd be curious how it actually works, though.
Yeah, I would too. I'm very curious. But also, and the reason why I set up the story kind of funky is because, of course, Epic Games, Grandpa's always going to bring up ZZT, which I've brought up a lot on this show, especially when we talk about, you know, Tim Sweeney's start in the industry. I'm not a fan of a lot of his shit now, but certainly back in the day in the 90s when he was making ZZT, like, that game was legendary. And you might remember ZZT. Why was it popular? Because it brought this whole ZZT OOP, object oriented programming language, where you could make your own games. And we saw some really cool shit in ZZT back in the day. And that's why, to me, it's like, this is fascinating how this has come full circle. And essentially, ZZT is coming to Fortnite. Actually, I would love to see somebody. I would love to see somebody build ZZT in Fortnite, and I think it'll happen. But you still have a programming language. It may not be ZZT OOP, but now it's Unreal.
That is going to C++. Yeah.
That's now going to allow people to make their own stuff in Fortnite. And it could be very interesting. I've been watching a lot more Fortnite because Alan's been getting into it more. He streams it occasionally. He's kind of prefers his mod games, but I watch over his shoulder sometimes. And, you know, Fortnite's interesting. It's still going after all this time. And, you know, especially the no build mode is great for people like me that just think the building adds something to the game that doesn't need to be there. But it's great. So I'm very curious to see what this Unreal Editor brings, especially when it comes to non-gaming experiences.
Yeah, it comes out on the 22nd. I think it's for free. So to check it out, I guess, if you're interested.
All right. Before I get to the next story, I noticed Dark Sakura's cat has entered the chat. Would Mida care to comment on any of the stories tonight?
You have anything to say?
Put me down.
Okay. Did you hear the grunt?
I did. That's great.
Yeah. She's just mad because I picked her up and she's like, mother, no.
I tried to pick up Cheddar earlier, and I had him on cam for like 2 seconds, but he was not having it. He came in here. He came in here and was like, meow, meow, meow. I have plenty of pictures of Cheddar, let me tell you. But Oh, are you going to redo the movie at the start of the thing?
Yeah, I need to, because I had that one where I had to fix a gap in it. But I would like to expand and add in some of the community cats.
Make them pay points to put their cat in. No, I'm just kidding.
We could put a redeem like that. I mean,
I don't want you to have to update it all the time, though. So, but yes,
no, that would be fine. What I would do is I would take them for a month and implement them at the end of the month.
Okay. We could look into doing it. I was just going to say, just open it up and let the listeners submit their cats. But if we want to make them pay points to do it, I'm sure people are sitting on thousands upon thousands of points. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure are happy to burn them. So we'll see, because we don't have a lot of redeems on this channel. It's just the way it's set up. So, all right.
Yeah, we also need like our lurk commands and stuff like that. We definitely need to update some things.
A first command?
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about a rumor, of a Soul Calibur remaster potentially incoming. You know, we haven't seen much with the Soul Calibur series since the sixth game, which I feel like was a couple years ago at this point. But if rumors are to be believed, including Xbox game journalist Shafal Nick, I hope I said that right, sorry, from xputer.com, I believe is the website, reporting that Bandai Namco is preparing a remaster of the original Soul Calibur. This was on the Xbox Era podcast, but he's unsure if it's the original Soul Calibur or is it a collection with 1 and 2. After all, Soul Calibur 2 was probably the most epic edition of the game, probably because the GameCube version had Link. So I don't know if they would be able to keep any of that. You might remember, you got to go way back, but the GameCube version had Link. The Xbox version had a Tekken character. Right? Wasn't it? I don't remember who the PlayStation had. I remember, we lost Dark Sakura. I remember the Xbox version had Spawn. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember who the PlayStation had.
Heihachi.
Was it Heihachi? Okay, I thought it was somebody from Tekken. Yeah. So, all right.
What about, I thought we had Yoshimitsu in one.
He came later, not in Soul Calibur 2. He was a character in... he's like in the original, like he was just always a playable character in the series.
I mean, I don't know why I was thinking that. I meant the Star Wars characters.
They were four.
That was four.
They were the big land in four. Yeah, three had the Assassin's Creed crossover. Four was Star Wars. Five, I don't remember.
God of War, or it was Kratos, I think, was in one of them.
Oh, right.
Was there even anyone on Xbox, or was it just PlayStation that got Kratos?
That might have been the PlayStation only one. I think they only released 5 on PlayStation. I could be wrong. And then 6, I don't remember who said. Oh, 6 had the Witcher guy. Geralt was in 6. So, interesting. All right. Let's move on and get to our next story. So, Dark Sakura.
Come up, Vince. So, and this information is coming directly from the Federal Trade Commission, so nothing through any sort of lens other than what the FTC has said, posted as of the 14th of this month. So, they have finalized an order requiring Epic Games, as in, you know, our Fortnite friends, to pay $245 million to consumers to settle charges that the company... made using dark patterns to trick players into making unwanted purchases, and also letting underage players also rack up purchases without parental involvement. Basically, in the settlement, the FTC said that, and I'll just go ahead and read this. Epic deployed a variety of design tricks known as dark patterns aimed at getting consumers of all ages to make unintended in-game purchases. Fortnite's counterintuitive, inconsistent, and confusing button configuration led players to incur unwanted charges based on the press of a single button. The company also made it easy for children to make purchases while playing Fortnite without requiring any parental consent. According to the FTC's complaint, Epic also locked the accounts of customers who disputed unauthorized charges with their credit card companies. They must pay $245 million, which will be used to provide refunds to consumers. It also prohibits Epic from charging through dark patterns and otherwise charging without affirmative consent. So no more one button purchase. It's like purchase, do you agree?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it also bars Epic from blocking customers from accessing their accounts for disputing unauthorized charges. The commission voted 4-0 to approve the complaint and order. There's a separate settlement. Also, this was announced in December. Epic agreed to pay $275 million penalty to settle FTC allegations that the company violated the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Apparently, like, some data had been leaked involving underage players. And also list this for those who may be involved in, or entitled to compensation. If you believe you have been injured by Epic's practices, you can visit ftc.gov/Fortnite. So Federal Trade Commission site, ftc.gov/Fortnite. And see if you're eligible for any portion of this dispensation.
And this will probably be mostly, not exclusively, but mostly families with kids who racked up purchases because, you know, the one touch purchasing and the tricks they do moving the buttons around and things like that, you know, and just all that. So I'm kind of glad that we're creating some sort of standards for these games, because there's a lot of games, especially there's a lot of stuff out there with like, an ad will come up on the screen and you can't even like X out of the ad. And it's very annoying. And those aren't the Fortnites. Those are the more like up and coming type of games and stuff. So I'm kind of glad that this is going to set kind of a standard that at least these larger studios have to go by, that some of these nasty tricks are going to get in trouble for. So I think it was kind of needed for the industry, not just for Epic.
Well, and this really is going to set a precedence too, yeah, and send a very clear message that no,
yeah,
we're not down with that.
Yeah. So, all right, let's move on, and we're over to Loki.
So excited for this game to be coming out. Oh, it's one boy of those games of 2023. It's Square Enix's NFT game. Oh yeah, features here already. No. It's Symbiogenesis, and they had the first official trailer come out for the game. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the game is, because the trailer doesn't show anything. It just has annoying music, and it shows, like, some landscape thing.
To be fair, that's very typical for Square Enix trailers, so, like, I'm not going to razz Symbiogenesis for that when there's so much more we could be critical of, right?
Yeah, so basically it says Square Enix has all the story chapters can be completed and played to the end even without having character NFTs, but those in-game purchases will arrive with a specific utility for those who hold the NFT collectible art. Players with character NFTs will be able to read unique stories, gain rank experience points easily, create a replica of their character, and gain additional NFT art when the missions are cleared. So some story elements will be withheld from players who do not purchase NFTs, impacting the overall gameplay experience.
And you know how we can make sure that we avoid all that?
Easy.
Don't buy it. Don't support it.
I mean, that's easy. I have no interest in this game whatsoever. So
this is the wrong year to release this game. Actually, no, this is the right year to release this game so that it completely falls off the radar and Babylon flops. Like, that's what's going to happen to this game. That's it. That's all I have to say. I don't think this game deserves anything more than that. So
exactly. So
all right.
Hopefully, if you want to die a slow, painful death.
If you want to see how a Square Enix president got fired, you can check this game out. All right. Moving on. This is interesting to me, a new studio that is being set up, and it's from former Blizzard staff. And here's the thing, J. Allen Brock is one of the three. And when I heard that he was involved with this, I was kind of like, oh, I see, he's trying to come back from a lot of, because you might remember J. Allen Brock, he was the guy that was kind of shamed out of Blizzard. Like, that's what it was, really, when all the discourse came up at Blizzard and how employees are being treated and all that stuff. He really took the fall for a lot of that. He needed to. He was the face of the company for a lot of that. You know, Mike Morhaime had been gone for a little bit, and this guy wasn't exactly good with his PR and the way that he gave speeches and stuff. So he left. And now he's teaming up with some other former Blizzard leads to make Magic Soup Games. But here's where it gets interesting. Who are those other Blizzard leads? One of them is Jen O'Neill. Jen O'Neill was one of the two CEOs that came in to replace J. Allen Brack. That's interesting. And that's so at first I kind of just was like, oh, whatever. He's making a new studio, you know, whatever. And then when I saw that she's involved too, I was like, whoa, that is a very interesting pairing, because she came in to replace him. And you may recall, she only stayed a year and a half, if that. And she left because she found out her and Mike Ybarra, who is now the sole Blizzard CEO, were not making the same amount of money. And she put her foot down and said, I'm being underpaid. This is unfair. And she left. And it wasn't until she left that Blizzard offered to pay her the same thing. And at that point, she was basically like, kiss my ass. And I don't blame her whatsoever for that. But isn't it interesting that she is teaming up with J. Allen Brack? I just find that fascinating.
I mean, it's not his decision to pay. You know, like, because if they were getting paid differently, like, is it his decision that he paid?
Well, he had nothing to do with it. She came in after he was gone.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. And then the other person involved with this, John Donham, who did have a senior role at Blizzard. I believe he's worked with like Amazon and some other companies as well. O'Neill is going to be the studio CEO. And she said in a statement, Jay, John, and I have similar ideas about the types of games we want to make, and we're tightly aligned on company goals and principles, so this was a natural fit for us. We know the quality of our games will be a reflection of our team culture. We're doing the work up front to make sure we're fostering creativity, fully remote collaboration, and a diversity of backgrounds. It's interesting to me. I mean, when she quit Blizzard, she made it sound like she wasn't coming back to the games industry, or that she was going to be advocating for women in the industry. And it's not to say she hasn't done that in the last, you know, 18 months or whatever since she's left. It's just interesting. I have no other word that she's coming back and it's with him to make this company, but she's going to be the CEO this time. So it's just, I'm curious to see what they make and what their game is that they're coming up with. If To be fair, Jen O'Neill, when she was over, what was it, Vicarious Visions was where she came from, and they did that Diablo 2 remaster, which was great. And a lot of the remasters that company worked on were really good. She certainly has the resume. It's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see what game they're making. If they're going to try to make an RPG or something that's along the lines of what Blizzard does, or something completely different. Questbuster says, this is what, the second studio formed by former Blizzard devs? There was one a few months ago working on a new RPG that was put together by former WoW devs. Yeah, wasn't Chris Metzen one of them? And now, isn't he back at Blizzard? I thought I heard that was a thing recently. That he had come back. Let's see. I'm trying to find like the whole... Oh, he returned to the company as a creative advisor in December 2022. So he's only an advisor there. Hmm. War Chief Games was the studio that they ended up. Oh, this is a whole other studio. That's right. There was Frost Giant Games. I was thinking of the one War Chief Games that did the tabletop. Or is going to be working on that. Very interesting. A lot of these other studios coming out of the Blizzard stuff. So we'll see. Hard to say much more until we see a single frame of footage of whatever it is they're working on, and it'll be years, so we'll see. All right. Well, even though that will take years, we can reflect on years past and some of the great games that have come in years past with our next segment.
Now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
But in a twist, once a month, Dark Sakura picks a non-video game to spotlight this year in 2023. And what did you pick?
I picked Simon. Simon is a game that uses your short-term memory to earn points and win the game. And it makes a fart noise at you when you do badly. It is was released by Milton Bradley, now Hasbro. And contrary to popular belief, it is not called Simon Says. Simon Says is a game that you play on the playground. Simon is, it's got four buttons, and it plays things in a sequence. And anyone who has played Among Us knows that there is a version of Simon in Among Us as well. You know, it'll like start with red. You hit red, and then red, green, and then red, green, green. You know, you have to repeat it, and you have to remember the sequence. But for a little bit more of the history behind it, basically you have to, you know, play the sequence within the time limit that it gives you, or else the game is over. But it was manufactured and published by Milton Bradley and then Hasbro. It was the coding is in assembly. Written by Charles Capps, who also taught computer science at Temple University and wrote one of the first books on the theories of computer programming. It was launched in 1978 at Studio 54.
Huh.
Yep. In New York City. It was an immediate success, and then it boomed all over pop culture. But yeah, it to have a little bit of history about it, there was an Atari game called Touch Me. And this was at the Music Operators of America trade show in 1976. And Ralph Baer and Howard Morrison were there. They said, nice gameplay, terrible execution, visually boring, miserable rasping sounds. So they bought the prototype. For this was actually built on a Texas Instruments TMS 1000 microcomputer chip, like many of the games 1970s. And then Lenny Cope, who was also one of the partners there, programmed the core of the game that was called Follow Me. They developed the tones. They were inspired by the sounds of a bugle. And then when they pitched the demo, they had an 8x8-inch console, and they showed Milton Bradley, and they changed the name to Simon. Simon did debut 1978 at the retail price of $24.95, which today, SSJ 100, Matt, that's funny. Studio 54, I'm sure people played it with their nose, if you know what I mean. No, Cher played it on the back of a white horse. That would be the equivalent of $104 as of 2021. So it was expensive. But it became one of the top-selling toys for that holiday season. And its patent is 4,002,087. Microcomputer controlled game was it was granted its patent in 1980. And then they did others that came out, you know, after that. I didn't know anyone who didn't have a Simon at some point. I had a Simon. I had several Simons, but we had, they released like a pocket Simon and then a Super Simon. I have only ever seen a Super Simon once in the wild. Super Simon, we'll get into that in a little bit. But at any rate, there have been so many different variants since Hasbro acquired Milton Bradley in the 1980s. There was, again, the Super Simon was a hexagonal unit with six buttons, only released in Europe. Like I said, I've only seen one Super Simon in person. In 2000, there was Simon Squared, which was a unit with the four buttons on one side and a set of eight smaller buttons on the other. 2004, we had Simon Sticks, which had two electronic sticks like drumsticks and an emphasis on the musical part of the game, and had different like four levels of gameplay. I agree. If there was no Simon, there would be no Bop It. Anyway, in 2005, we got Simon Trickster, also known as Simon Tricks in Europe, UK, and Simon Genius in Brazil. It had four game modes that were similar to Bop It and colored lenses instead of buttons. There's also, of course, Simon Classic mode, which plays up to 35 tones. Simon Bounce is like Simon Classic, but the colors of the lenses change. Simon Surprise is probably one of the most difficult ones. Every lens is the same color, and you have to memorize the location. Simon Rewind requires you to memorize the sequence backwards. And then you are paid a compliment after you finish on reaching 5 and 11 tones. The game will say, awesome, nice, sweet, respect. On 18, you get a victory melody that plays three times. And then in 2011, there was Simon Flash, which in this one, you have a cube. The game has four cube-shaped electronic modules that the player must move around depending on the game mode. 2013, they reinvented Simon one more time with Simon Swipe. It has a circular unit that looks like a steering wheel, and it extended from four buttons to eight touchscreen buttons, which are all flattened out on the unit, and you play by, swiping. And then there was Simon Air in 2016 that used motion sensors, kind of like the Loops games. And it had a solo classic multiplayer mode, and it tried to retain its aesthetic when they did a button version, kind of like the old school one. And then there was Simon Optics, which is a headset motion sensor game. But you know what? Let's go back to the old school. So the original Simon, like I said, four colored buttons, each with a different tone when pressed or activated by the device. And a round in the game consists of the game lighting up in a random order, and you have to mimic that order. And the name did come from the children's game Simon Says, but also based on Atari's Touch Me arcade game from 1974. But this is just Simon. So the tones were designed to always be harmonic, no matter the sequence. And they consisted of an A major triad and second inversion, like a trumpet fanfare. So the blue was E. The yellow was C sharp, red was A, and green was E, but it was an octave lower than than the blue E. And some of them, though, in 1978, they did use some alternative tones, and they used a B flat minor triad. So blue was B flat, yellow was C sharp, red was F, and green was the lower octave B flat. And it had been re-released and redesigned, and there's actually like a clear one. For me, it's always the original Simon. And then Nelsonic, which I have brought up last year as doing the watch games. Remember them? They did a Simon wristwatch version. So, like I said, there were different shapes and different sizes and different ways it came out. The Simon Swipe actually had a different note progression. It had blue was G, yellow was C, red was E, and green was a high octave G. And there have been so many clones. Atari re-released their handheld Touch Me in 1978 with multicolored buttons and better sounds. And there was Monkey See, Monkey Do that had oval-shaped buttons. Tiger Electronics did copycats in 1979 with a transparent case and used buzzards. It was also re-released by Sears as Follow Me, which was the original name. And then there was Copycat Junior and Pocket Repeat by Tandy Computers, as in Tandy from Radio Shack. Castle Toys had Einstein. Genius came out in Brazil in the 80s. Space Echo was by some company. There was a DIY version out there that you could solder together. Another DIY called Electronic Memory Game that was based on the ARM Cortex microcontrollers. Game A mode on the second game in the Game & Watch handheld was Flagman. Game B is the same, but it doesn't play in sequence. You have a limited time to respond to where it lifts up. There was the R2-D2 Ditto Droid, which is a Star Wars version, and this was released by Tiger Electronics in 1987. There's a side quest in the SNES and Game Boy Advance versions of Donkey Kong Country 3, Dixie Kong's Double Trouble, that had that was called like Banana Birds, and you had to use the different buttons on your controller. Soviet company Electronica, IE-01 Evolga, which was almost an exact replica of Simon. Oddworld Games had very similar puzzles. Sequences also were on several other handhelds, just all kinds of Parker Brothers games, Atari. There's a Toytronics Gotcha, which was very similar. And then the audio will play consistently, and then some will actually kind of cut down. There's some that use dog sounds, cats, pigs, cows, xylophones, you know, different kinds of space sounds. But also, it had a very big involvement in pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, The Tommyknockers, that came out in 1987 by Stephen King, someone had left a Simon in the backseat of a reporter's car that activated itself and went into a frenzy, overheating and melting and scorched the seat. The driver then knocks it to the floor before it goes up in flames. In It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, someone finds a Simon in the closet, Little Miss Gamer. Simon actually had characters meeting up. Family Guy was in, American Dad, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, Cougar Town, Paranormal Activity. There was a possessed Simon that worked as a Ouija board. Robot Chicken, Dick Cheney's heart was replaced with a Simon, like is in Iron Man. You remember, right?
No, I just... Robot Chicken's hilarious.
But, I mean, there was some in British TV shows. There's a mini game in Sabrina the Teenage Witch for Game Boy Advance. Even in South Park, The Stick of Truth, you had to play Simon to rescue Randy Marsh from an alien probe. Quick Time Events, The Island, Despicable Me, Veronica, which is a Spanish movie. All kinds of stuff. And then, of course, like I said, there was the sequence in Among Us. In fact, I like how it says it. In late 2020, the popular game Among Us featured a mini game loosely based on the design of Simon. However, most players mistakenly referred to it as Simon Says. It's kind of a pet peeve, but I don't say too much about it. But yeah, it's... There you go.
Yeah.
It was even in Heart to Heart, and I kind of remember this. it was in the season to be murdered. The Hearts play a fake Simon. And then Games Magazine included Simon in their top 100 games of 1980 and called it the original electronic follow the leader game. There you go.
I have a question. I know you've talked a lot about this and we want to get back into the news, but I'm genuinely curious after looking at this video where some person and the camera is extremely shaky. They're showing all their things.
The best video I could find.
Yeah, no. I'm not even. I found a different one because they show the Super Simon, and I'm super curious because I never played one of these, but you referenced it. Like, what? I mean, this thing looks weird because there's like up and down colors. What was super about Super Simon?
Barely remember. I was a kid, and one of my friends who grew up in England had one. God, how old was I? I have to think about it now. Super Simon.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, it's all right if you don't remember. But yeah, I was just like, this looks different than the others.
It was, it was like this big long strip. And yeah, I barely remember anything about it. I just remembered that one of my friends had it. How old was I? I had to have been like 6. I know they came out in the late 70s. Super Simon came out in 79. Yeah, I just remember not being very good at it, but we would play it together. We would take turns.
Interesting. I like this perspective too from Bonds006 in chat. And I don't know if this is Simon influence or just the colors, but I thought this was interesting. Bonds006 says those colors are imprinted into so many of the everyday visuals we deal with. Controller button colors for video games. And that is That is a very good point. I just so happen to have an Xbox Series X controller right here. And if you look at the buttons for X, Y, B, and A, red, yellow, green, blue, just like assignment. Now, granted, you could say that, well, it's the primary, it's the RGB and the primary colors. But I mean, there's no purple, it's there's no primary. Orange. I know, green, I know, but you know what I mean? Like, either it's primary light or primary, you know,
But look at the Japanese SNES color scheme. It had the colored buttons on it and the little logo on the side.
Yeah.
It was those colors. I mean, I've sampled those colors directly from my channel. You know, they are a red, yellow, blue, and green.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, I don't know if it's an influence from Simon as much as it is an influence of general aesthetics. You know, they're just colors that, well, I mean, red and green are actually opposites on the color wheel. Which means that side by side, they actually would cause a little bit of mental discomfort. Which, true story, that's why Freddy Krueger's sweater is red and green.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Gotta love Christmas. All right. those are the colors you see everywhere, Christmas. All right. Anyway, Simon, long history for that game. See it referenced not just in pop culture, but in other video games, including very recent things like Among Us. Yeah, huge influence of that game. So, all right. Great segment for the classic not video game. All right, let's travel around back to video games and talk about some other news going on in the industry in a segment we call Rapid Fire News. We'll go to Loki.
Yeah, so start with March's PlayStation Plus update. It's going to be adding lots of big games, including Ghostwire Tokyo, which we just talked about, which is coming to Xbox, Rage 2, Immortals Fenyx Rising, and some other stuff on there as well. Let's see. Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection, pretty cool. Rainbow Six Extraction, Life is Strange True Colors, Life is Strange 2, Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, Street Fighter V Championship Edition, Untitled Goose Game, Final Fantasy Type-O HD, that's a game I forgot I bought, Neo, The World Ends With You, and Haven. And then, of course, three new classic PlayStation games coming as well. I mean, only the best Ridge Racer game ever, Ridge Racer Type 4, Ape Academy 2 for PSP, and Siphon Filter Dark Mirror for PSP.
Hmm.
Seriously, Namco Bandai, why no new Ridge Racer game? This makes me very sad. Why? Why do I have to wait so long?
Give us a full remaster of R4 and find some way to bring in the Joy-Con compatibility.
Can we just have them sell the Ridge Racer franchise to the team that makes Forza Horizons, please? Like, can we just do that? Like, that would make everybody happy.
Forza's kind of made a name for itself at this point, though, so I don't know. I don't know if they're interested.
That's it. I need to just re-listen to the R4 soundtrack. It is so good.
Yeah. All right.
And then we've got some more news regarding the next Silent Hill movie. What? They have some of the cast picked out. That's correct. So now we're going to have Jeremy Irvine as, I guess, James, and Hannah Emily Anderson, who was in Jigsaw, who is going to be the co-star. I'm not sure who she is playing, though.
Hmm. Or maybe they're leaving it open for her to play multiple roles.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. But that's interesting that they are, taking this movie further and actually going to do it, it sounds like. So, yeah, this was supposed to be pretty true to Silent Hill 2, whereas the original movie, and again, I like the original movie, but it wasn't like, it was kind of the plot of the first game, right? But like, didn't they make some pretty big changes to it? So I don't know. It seems like they want to
Pyramid Head in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There were a number. I think the, you know, Pyramid, I'm actually going to quote Shayla and start calling him Pyramid Guy. Pyramid Guy was in there, I think, more for the sake of fan service.
Which is fine.
You have him there in the trailer. And honestly, the purpose of the character in Silent Hill 2 was there as a punisher and executioner.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits in. And it was actually part of the town's mythos, so I don't see any reason for it to not be in a non-Silent Hill related, you know, Silent Hill 2 related story.
So were they going to still make the second movie as canon? Because I don't even remember. I never watched the second movie. I watched the first one. I love the first one.
Do you mean the one that was based off 3, the 3D Revelation or whatever it's called?
I liked that one because I like Heather. Cheryl, Heather, Mason.
I thought there was a second Silent Hill movie.
There was. It was that. It was based off 3. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And I mean, it's not a great movie, I'll admit that, but I like it because Silent Hill 3 is my favorite of the series. Mm-hmm. I love seeing things from a rebellious, strong young teenager, you know, who's going out and thrown into this world and dealing with all of this shit.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see what they do with this, you know, supposedly loyal adaptation of Silent Hill 2. We'll see. We'll see. Especially in a year where we know we're getting, you know, as Jason kind of referenced in the intro, it's the year of Silent Hill. We already know, like, they're working on all of these other projects, including a Silent Hill 2 remaster.
So
oh, just add that to the fucking list from earlier in this show of games for this year. Jesus.
Like, what a year, like, going from, like, oh gosh, you know, like, years where, like, can we please get a new Silent Hill game to, like, we're going to give you so many Silent Hill games. It's like,
I can't believe when I was going over all those 2023 games earlier, I didn't name a single Silent Hill game. Just add that to the list.
There's just so much that we're going to forget about that's coming out. Like, oh yeah, that's right. That's a thing. And
some games are going to suffer because this year is too stacked. That's the weird thing.
Fine. Ugh. Stuff will get delayed.
I hope y'all saved your PTO from during the pandemic because you're going to be burning it on video games this year. All right. Let's see. We have other rapid fire news, I think, from Dark Saga.
Yeah. There is a new Tekken 8 trailer that has Martial Law coming back. I love the character of Martial Law. I think he looks way too yoked out in this, though. Like, the thing I always liked about Martial Law and Forest Law is that they were the sleek Bruce Lee type, like, almost completely. And he looks like that someone took anabolic steroids and gave him a freaking IV full of them. He took whatever Bane's taking. But still,
I had to see this for myself on the YouTube that they released here just to see what you're talking about here.
Does he not look like super yoked?
Yeah, a little bit.
But I always liked the character, and, you know, I got out of Tekken right around, I'd say, Tekken 5.
Oh, no. I hate that poppy, veiny look. Not a fan. Not a fan of that look. I'm with you. Love the character. Don't love this.
But I've seen some really neat stuff in this, and especially, you know, my man Jin looks pretty hot. So I think that I would... This might be the one that gets me back into Tekken.
Yeah. Ooh, Dark Tetsuya with an interesting point here. I'm reminded of that BS story about Fei Long not being in Street Fighter VI. I remember that whole drama. I want to say Martial Law was the same kind of character. Yeah. So it's interesting that BS story didn't follow over here. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really know what the difference would be. I think there's got to be some other reason, but I don't think it has to do with, like, likeness. I mean, Martial Law and Forest Law started off kind of similar, but they also had, like, the backstory of cooking and all this other stuff going on, so maybe they were different enough.
Yeah. Moving on to something very different than what we're used to, at least with the pre-orders in the United States, and that is a pre-order bonus that Amazon Japan is offering for... Excuse me, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, and that is a spoon and a fork. Now, before you giggle at the concept of a spoon and fork being a pre-order item, there's silverware seems to be a common theme with some Japanese pre-orders. I remember when Dark Sakura had that game for the Dreamcast, the Saturn.
Cardcaptor Sakura.
It was Cardcaptor Sakura, that's right. Came with like a whole freaking dish and everything else. And then I think I saw on Twitter, I think I just saw him in chat, Shane, yeah, who said, who's also waiting for the Short Message SH game. I want to say Shane had posted that Pokemon out in Japan had a fork and a spoon too, Scarlet and Violet. So this isn't exactly unheard of. It's just not something you often see in the US as a pre-order bonus.
Sakura Taisen that came out at the same time that that Cardcaptor Sakura game came out, also had a big bonus set like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Cardcaptor Sakura came with a pillowcase, a fork and a knife, a bowl, and a pillowcase cover. A pillowcase.
Why not? So
why not?
Why not? There you go. All right. Well, we'll check out some other limited edition releases because they love limited edition releases in Japan. There's always like every game. You hear me read those release dates every week. Like every other game has a limited edition. We'll get into some of those. But first, let's go to the U.S. and check out some releases for the U.S. this week.
This week we have Mighty Doom coming out on iOS and Android. That's the cute little Doom game that they're putting out. Remnant from the Ashes for Nintendo Switch. We have Chichia on PC, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. Have a Nice Death on PC and Nintendo Switch. Atelier Ryza 3 Alchemist of the End and the Secret Key on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. Omen of Sorrow on PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 5. Rakuen on Nintendo Switch, R-Type Final 3 Evolved on PlayStation 5, Song of Memories on Nintendo Switch, Storyteller on PC and Nintendo Switch, and it looks like later in the week we also have the Atelier Ryza 3 coming out on looks like PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5 as well, maybe one physical, one digital or something like that. The first one was for Japan. There we go. So U.S. getting it slightly a little bit later. Resident Evil 4, the remake finally coming out on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. And I believe that's it for the week.
All right, heading to Japan and checking out some of the releases on the Nintendo Switch. Atelier Ryza 3 is out pretty much everywhere in Japan in a regular, premium box, and special collection box. All of that. Swoon Earth Escape also out on the Switch in Japan this week, as well as Grim Guardians Demon Purge. That has a multilingual edition coming out in Japan this week. SD Shin Kamen Rider Rumble is also out this week from Bandai Namco in Japan on the Switch this week. And if you're a fan of NBA 2K, K23, well, it gets a price reduction. It goes into the 2K collection in Japan this week, so you can check that out if you haven't already. Over on the PlayStation 5 in Japan, similar titles. Atelier Ryza 3 also out on the PlayStation 5, as well as Grim Guardians Demon Purge. But also coming to the PlayStation 5, R-Type Final 3 Evolved. Also getting a multilingual edition out in Japan this week. And then that Biohazard RE4, because remember, they call the series Biohazard over there, what we call Resident Evil. That is also coming out in Japan this week for the PlayStation 5. And yes, there is a deluxe edition and a collector's edition also available in Japan. I was just looking to see if that collector's edition includes a knife and a fork. I'm sorry to say it does not, but it does look like it has a little crate. This looks like one of those crates that sits on the map when you play against Wesker in a Dead by Daylight that you get with this collector's edition here for Resident Evil. So, but that's what can sit on the shelf. There's also that whole Leon statue. That's pretty cool, I gotta say. I mean, I have to have less physical stuff in my house, but that Leon statue does look pretty cool. So
I have to say, though, going back to R-Type Final 3.
Yeah.
Apparently people name video games the way I name my art files. Final. No, really the final. The extra final. Final part two. Final part three. They should just give up. No more finals.
Interesting comment from DJ Roma S before we get to the UK dates, asking about the Grim Guardian games. Didn't they change the name to Gal Guardians? They actually changed the name. You know, when I'm looking at this list of releases, they are still, and this could be a Japan versus US thing, because remember, I am reading Japanese releases, but they actually show the box art here still stating that it's Grim Guardians. So I don't know if maybe... I don't know. But yeah, that's what it's showing the box art there. So could be something that they just changed here. I don't know. Interesting. Moving on. How about the UK, Darksaka?
Let's see. In the UK, a really a handful of things. On the 21st for Switch, we have Remnant from the Ashes. Also, the 23rd for the Switch, Raven's Burger Memory. On PlayStation and Switch, we have Crazy Chicken Cart 2. On the 24th for PlayStation and Xbox, we have Resident Evil 4 Remake Steelbook Edition. For PlayStation, we have Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion. I just think that's the best name. And again, on the 24th, for PlayStation and Switch, Altelia Ryza 3, Alchemist of the End and Secret Key.
All right. Let's move on and get a few more stories and then maybe some phone calls. If you want to call in later in the show over at vognetwork.com/Discord, you can always join the green room and join the Discord conversations throughout the week. Some of our stories tonight coming from the Orange Lounge Radio channel on Discord, because you all like the piece on Magic Spoon games I talked about earlier. Or no, Magic Soup games, not Magic Spoon. I'm getting confused with the Zelda pre-order. But the Magic Soup games came from the Discord. Somebody had posted that the other night. So, and I was like, oh, I hadn't heard about this. So thank you all who participate in our Discord server throughout the week, vognetwork.com/Discord. And you can call in by joining the green room in just a moment. We still have about 10 minutes before we get there because we still have a few more stories. Let's go to Loki.
Yeah, so Blizzard has banned about 120,000 World of Warcraft bot accounts that were using the Death Knight class of farm resources from Wrath of the Lich King Classic. They said, you know, we felt it was very important for the launch of Wrath of the Lich King Classic to give anyone who wanted to hop in this iconic expansion the ability to do so with few barriers as possible, allowing every account to access the Death Knight, even if they did not meet the historical requirements. It was important. However, now that the initial launch period is past, we no longer wish to allow unrestricted creation of Death Knights on brand new accounts. It was a tempting vector for malicious actors to use to get into the game and start exploiting very quickly. So they're no longer allowing you to create a Death Knight from the get-go. You still have to go through the process to do it the normal method, I guess, to, you know, stop the bot accounts, I guess.
This is funny because I remember doing this in Classic WoW, like, or it, when this game was live. I remember rolling Death Knights to have alt characters that could do farming, like, you know, with stuff that maybe I don't have otherwise. Like, if my main character had herbalism, alchemy, maybe I have a Death Knight who could do mining and pick that up really fast. But again, you had to have a character at level 55 in the original one, so you had to go up through the ranks originally anyway. So yeah. I mean, you're just kind of reverting back to that basically. So,
yeah.
All right. Dark Sakura. This story makes me say, oh my God, shoes.
Well, they are definitely shoes.
Oh my God.
These shoes are $300.
They probably are.
Funny enough, I was actually, when I was playing Midnight Suns last night, and I just went right into shoes and I had no idea why. Anyway, Red Wing, the company that makes, you know, boots, work boots and other boots and everything, did Mario's boots. They are not for sale, for the record. They are not $300. but at any rate, the company has on their website a video for showing how they transformed Mario's footwear into real world boots. It has serene music and you witness the design.
It does. Some of it may have just slipped through on the stream a little bit. Sorry about that. Let's get to the good stuff. Show the shoes. There we go.
but at any rate, it's not the first time this has been done. A Brooklyn art collective, MSCHF, like Mischief, did a pair of ballooning red boots, like were shown on Astro Boy, and they were purchased actually for $350, so not bad, and were worn by Lil Wayne, Lil Nas X, Coily Ray, and Rich the Kid. But I think that these Mario ones are not going to see the light of day as far as anything the public can acquire, but they kind of look comfortable.
Apparently, DJ Romance, I thought I saw this on Twitter, and I'm loving the caption on this, by the way. It says, dramatic music and workshop sounds through the whole thing. But DJ Romance says the shoes are on display at Nintendo New York. And I remember seeing some stuff on social media about they had a whole fanfare to unveil some shoes that were just shoes that you can't buy. Boots are not for sale.
Rob.
What?
Let's see some shoes.
Let's.
I've already been to New York, and after 5 minutes, I was like, "Let's go."
All right.
Yeah.
Moving on, Loki with some not great news this week.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had the news that Lance Reddick had passed away. And, you know, he was 60 years old, a Hollywood actor who had played in many big properties. You know, The Wire, John Wick, also had a significant role in Destiny 2. Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away this week. And of course, along with that, you know, there was tributes that were done by Destiny players to the fallen commander. And I mean, it's pretty cool to see. And of course, you know, lots of heartfelt responses from different people, and, you know, talking about him and everything. Far too young, I feel.
Yeah, 60, still really young, all things considered. And yeah, as mentioned in chat there, Dr. Zia says, I admit, I didn't know he had a few video game roles, but still sad stuff. Yeah, and I think as far as recent stuff goes, if I remember right, he was the guy that played Wesker in the new Resident Evil series that was on Netflix. Granted, wasn't really well received and didn't get renewed because it's a Netflix show, but he still, you know, definitely made an impression as, you know, a different take on Wesker than maybe what people were used to from what's his name's, you know, vocal performances. So, SJ100 Matt says he was so talented and such a good guy. I followed him on Twitter and he always posted about his dogs and playing games. Mish says he was in the new John Wick. Sorry if you mentioned it. I'm gaming, so I'm kind of zoning out. No, I mean, definitely a lot of his media appearances he was definitely known for.
You just remember him from the Eric Andre show.
Yeah.
His bit was great in that.
Oh, Shane pointing out another game that he was involved in. I forgot about his role here. He says, I'll always remember him from Fringe. So there's a lot of, you know, folks.
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, Fringe. Awesome.
And the highly underrated Quantum Break. Yeah, that game was, you know, did fall off the radar of a lot of people, but that was a really impressive early Xbox One game. So, yeah. Questbuster points out his character in Horizon Zero Dawn. So he's played a lot more than just the one in Destiny. It's just that Destiny is the one that everybody's connected. So, you know, you're able to kind of do those tributes, you know, when people pass away. So,
hey, Rob,
what?
I knew you were talking about age and something. I actually looked this up for a minute, and you know what? That middle age is now considered 55 to 65.
Oh, wow. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm still not middle-aged. Good.
Me either.
Woo-hoo. All right. Well,
although I still want to, you know, turn into, you know, Stalker Channing as the aunt, you know, in Practical Magic and just be cool and wake people up for midnight margaritas.
Mm-hmm.
That would be me.
Tiger Claw in chat says, I thought middle age was when you reached the 40s. Not anymore. Haven't you heard of the old saying 40 is the new 20? Wasn't what they say? I don't know. But anyway.
But they also say like it's like, like, I think that what is actually like back in the 1920s, old was 55.
Mm-hmm.
And now like new old is like 65.
I think that's absolutely what you're referring to is just because of science and treatment of diseases and prevention. People are able and less, you know, wars and so forth. Not to say there isn't any, but less on a global scale. Anyway, the life expectancy is getting longer. But anyway,
apparently what defines old age is when you hit the age that is the common for, I think, 4% mortality.
Hmm.
Anyway, there's your science lesson.
Lance Riddick, though, by these standards, was still middle age and far too young. Yeah. So.
Totally.
A great loss for the industry. All right, last story tonight, and this is usually the in memoriam stories would be the last story, but I'm purposely burying this one at the end of the show because I'm sick and tired of talking about Call of Duty, to be quite honest.
Call of Duty, more like it.
But we have, it is a big title in the industry, and it has been dominating what's going on with the Activision Blizzard acquisition and all that. So what happened this week in the ongoing saga of Microsoft trying to get the regulators to allow them to buy Activision Blizzard? Microsoft signed another 10-year Call of Duty agreement. This, Dark Soccer, this one may be interesting to you. I know you're not a big Call of Duty player, but the agreement they signed was with an international cloud gaming service called Boosteroid.
Oh, Boosteroid. Yeah.
And the company...
I really wanted to like Boosteroid. I really wanted to. But the connection was so bad.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're mainly overseas too. Their development team is Ukraine based. The software development team is Ukraine based. So yeah, it's probably a different experience in the UK than what you had here. But Boosteroid is the service that's going to be getting Call of Duty in a 10-year agreement here. So Microsoft is trying to sign these agreements to try to get the deal to close so that it does, you know, and also continue to make Sony look like they're getting an offer that they are just refusing, basically. So interesting.
Kind of related, and this is very important, bignews.com. Disney Dreamlight Valley is finally available on GeForce.
Oh, I didn't know it was not on there originally. Interesting.
It wasn't for a little bit. It just popped up on my available list and I already own it.
All right. All right. Well, that was all of the news we officially had slated for tonight, but I am going to open things up for the listener roundtable. If we have anyone that wants to call in, go for it over at vognetwork.com/discord. You can join the green room. Also, if you have any just general questions, maybe you're just feeling shy, you don't really want to call, that's fine. You can ask your questions in chat. I always do a mailbag check. I don't think I saw anything, but I will check in. Participate@orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send emails.
I'm afraid that the dust bunnies in there have like formed entire warrens and they're in competition with cobwebs
and spam.
Is that why the floor in there is all sticky and squishy?
There's a little bit of spam that lines the floor in there. All right.
Gross.
But not as bad as the old email account. So
no.
Fanara in chat says, have you shared the D&D Easter egg?
So cool.
What is this? I actually don't know.
There is apparently a scene where the group in the movie is walking and across from them is the cartoon D&D party.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Gwen sent me the picture and I will, send you the link.
Did that movie actually come out now, or is that next week?
It's next week, okay. I think.
Who wants to go see it with me?
Or at the end of the month.
Maybe. I want to go. They re-released it back into theaters, I think, just this week, but Everything Everywhere All at Once is in theaters again. I kind of want to see it, but I didn't get to do it this weekend, so it'd have to be during the week. But one of the places it's playing is the Roseville Galleria, and so you can go upstairs to watch the movie and then downstairs to go to round one. So just food for thought.
Well, I sent you the picture, but you know what? I'll go ahead and post the link in chat that Gwen gave me.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Now all of our friends can see it too.
Shane in chat says, I know nothing about D&D, but I want to see it for some reason. The previews look good. And yes, Dark Soccer booped the link there in chat. I'm not going to show the picture on stream just because some people are very hypersensitive about spoilers. So I'm just going to leave it at that. You can click the link if you like, but I won't show it on stream for now.
I haven't already just told you.
Yeah, right. As Joe100 Matt says, speaking of emptying your wallet, have you seen the Tron Light Cycle Run merch that they're going to have at Disney World? Oh, was this the whole like custom figures? Yes.
Give it to us. God. We went into Disneyland.
It looks so, it does look so good. Like you can make your, because of course the lightsabers work so well. Yeah.
We need a Tron Land.
When am I going to be able to afford to go to Disney World?
We need like this whole underground complex and call it the grid.
Here's the sad thing about this whole thing. I'm going to go on the Star Trek cruise out of Port Canaveral. You fly into Orlando to go to Port Canaveral. Technically, they have their own airport, but everybody says it's quicker if you just fly into Orlando. So we're going to be in Florida, in Orlando. But like, and Bobby's even saying, go next February. Here's the thing, but thinking it through, that means we would do, because we wouldn't just be able to do one day at Disney World. We'd have to do like two or three. So we'd do like 3 days at Disney World and then a 7-day cruise. Or vice versa, a 7-day cruise and then 3 days at Disney World. I don't know if I could handle it.
I want that jacket.
Bobby says, I've done it. Dang. All right. So 3 days in the park and then relax on the cruise. Maybe. I don't know. I gotta think it through. Like, I'm not going to lie. I'm fucking tempted. And the fact that I have already paid for the cruise does mean that financially it might be figure outable. I mean, technically, we could always, Alan is coming to Dragon Con. We could always go the week after Dragon Con, but then I'm going to be real tired after Dragon Con. So yeah, it's going to be rough. I want to do it. We'll just see. Because remember, Alan has to buy into this too. And being separated from the cats for so long is rough. But the cat sitting situation worked out this last time. So, you know, it gives him a lot of support in that department, I think. But yeah, I really want to ride the Tron Light Cycle Run. I just don't know when I'll get out there. We'll see. You know, honestly, I've been getting enough reward points where I could probably book a trip on reward points and make it happen. I just have to figure out a time that works with my work schedule. So we'll see.
You could come to Disneyland with me for my birthday.
Unfortunately, I have an executive level presentation at work the week after your birthday.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. But that just means you have to go to Disneyland a second time and then we can go.
I'll tell you what, I love when my friends meet me for Disneyland, but I also do not mind going by myself at all, mm-hmm. because then I do the whole thing at my own pace.
Yeah.
I actually want to go to Disney World by myself.
Because then you get to call the shots. You don't have to worry about anyone else. Yeah.
Exactly. And like, I people give me shit about it, but I don't like to be behind people who are taller than me. Yeah. It just makes me feel nervous. Mm-hmm. So I go into convention mode and weave through people and move around because I like to be able to see what's in front of me. And like, there's a lot of stuff that I would want to do and seriously do it by myself so I can just do things the way I want to do them.
Yeah.
However, I've done Disneyland so many times, it don't matter.
All right. I wanted to check in if there were any last minute stories while we wait to see if there's any other comments that come in. But I'll check on last minute stories here.
Yeah, there was a leak of a new LEGO racing game that's coming out called LEGO 2K Drive. And it was leaked by having some screenshots of it being shown. I guess they're doing some sort of beta test on the PvP racing part of it. But it looks sort of like kind of set up like a Mario Kart type game. And they've got different levels that are, I don't know if they're not really based off of Lego sets. It's just kind of different themes. So you have like this runway roundabout that kind of has airplanes in it, rapid falls, which kind of looks like a mountain, Swampus, which is, you know, swamp, cat scratch freeway, which has, it looks like a cat tree in there. And it's like a race course. I don't know if it has like a cat, like they did the Ninjago movies. Down on the farm, which, you know, obviously looks like a farm type thing. Glazed Overdrive. It's got donuts and candy stuff everywhere. And Headless Horsepower and Chasm Crossing. So it looks pretty cool. I'll play it when it comes out. I like Mario Kart and I like Lego, so of course.
All right. Well, with that, I believe we've reached the end of our show for tonight. But I want to thank everybody for listening once again to Orange Lounge Radio, whether it was on the podcast feed or live here at Twitch.tv/VogNetwork on Sunday nights. We appreciate you being a part of the experience and being a part of our family here on Sunday. Thank you so much for being here. And if you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But we need more voices here to put out on air. And a nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes, Spotify, wherever it is you found this podcast, those go an awful long way. You know, come join us. We're on the road to 1,000 weekly episodes coming up in next year, so it's gonna be something. So that right around the time that I may or may not go to Disney World and the Star Trek cruise, we'll see. So but that is coming up, so join us as we count the road to 1,000 weekly episodes. 48 more to go after tonight. All right. With that, let's wrap it all up for tonight. Dark Sakura, I know you're doing some streaming after the show tonight. I hope you have some fun. I'm assuming you're swiffing tonight and yeeting.
Actually, two of Team Yeet may be showing up a little bit later. But if Gwen's down to play, I'm down to have Gwen in. My one of my favorite people to play with. And other than that, I'm going to be an annoying killer.
Sounds good. And if Gwen does play, I'm casting a protective bubble around Gwen because those killers always pick on her and I hate to see it. So I'm doing it now. I'm casting a protective bubble around Gwen so that she's not tunneled by killers tonight. All right. Have a good
later,
stream.
All.
Bye.
I have fun storming the castle.
Will do. Think it'll work.
It'll take a miracle. Right. Bye.
Bye. All right. Loki, your final thought for tonight.
My final thought is I pasted a link in chat for the Resident Evil 4 anime that is apparently part of their marketing plan for the Resident Evil 4 game. It's done by Nippon Animation. It's ridiculous.
All right. My final thought, I'm going to probably go play some more Diablo 4 and get the most I can out of this beta. See if I can get all the way to 25 during the beta. But that's it. I'm having a great time and I can't wait to level another character next weekend. So, and I'll be doing some streaming hopefully too. Hopefully now that the network issues have stabilized a little bit, because I didn't stream on Friday because it took like an hour and a half to get in. And even then you would get disconnected sometimes, but it seems like they worked a lot of that out for Saturday, Sunday. So hooray, the beta's working as intended. So that's good. So hopefully next weekend will be a little more stable and I can do some streaming, but a lot of people have been streaming it, honestly, if you want to check that out. So that's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you all so much for being here. Appreciate you all. Have a wonderful week, everybody, and good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true.